About the difference between the heritage status and recent landmarks. In the staff presentation, it was noted that the Beach Towers site is listed on the recent landmarks inventory, and that as a condition of the rezoning, the site is to be added to the heritage register. There was a question about the difference of the heritage register and the recent landmarks inventory. Heritage resources on the heritage register are formally recognized as having heritage value by way of council approving their inclusion in the register. Resources that are on the heritage register are eligible for heritage incentives and programs and are subject to demolition delay provisions but are not protected from demolition. The recent landmarks program was initiated in 1990 to expand the scope of the existing heritage register to include modern buildings built after 1940 that are at least 20 years old. The resources that are listed on the recent landmarks inventory are informally recognized as having heritage value. Recent landmarks that are added to the heritage register have the same status and are eligible for the same incentives as those buildings and sites listed on the heritage register. There was also a question about the changes to the permitted densities in the West End. Staff noted that the existing density of Beach Towers at approximately 3.35 FSR is non-conforming to today's zoning, which allows a maximum density of only 2.2 FSR. So in the West End, from the late 50s to the late 60s, the maximum densities permitted ranged from 3 to 4 FSR, higher than they are today. Then during the 70s and 80s, there were a number of changes to the zoning, eventually decreasing the density to what we have today. And in 1989, the current West End design guidelines were adopted by council. These changes were all in response to public concerns related to the extent of tower forms in the neighborhood. The intent of the lower densities and the design guidelines were to retain the character of the West End neighborhood and to discourage demolition of existing housing. Good. Ms. Malero will now respond to the urban design questions, followed by Ms. Bond, who has some comments about housing affordability.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. So there was a question last time about the shadowing impacts, particularly on the property at the corner of 1558 Harwood. So the shadowing impacts that we normally assess buildings at are between 10, 12, and 2 p.m. measured on the equinox, and you can see there how the shadowing impacts transfer over the properties to the what I would call the north across Harwood Street. And the purple at the corner there at the bottom is the 1558 Harwood Street. That was the building that was put to question. Oops. So we asked the applicant to provide an updated shadow analysis, looking at the later times in the day, 4 p.m., 5 p.m., and 6 p.m., measured on the equinox again. And you can see that the existing tower building at 6 p.m. measured on the equinox is just starting to reach the corner of where 1558 Harwood is located. Now, if we look... So the equinox is sort of the halfway point through the year. The shadow is at the middle point. It's not at the longest point, as we would see in the December solstice. And the summer solstice is the shortest day of the year. And you can see there at the bottom at 5 p.m. that the existing tower is just reaching that particular building at 1558. Harwood. So the proposed building at the corner, which is shadowed there in green, is not really impacting at all the rooftop of 1558 Harwood Street. And now I'll pass it over to Abby Bond to speak to the STIR aspects.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm just going to switch over to the other slides. Abby Bond, Assistant Director of Housing Policy. So one of the questions that we were asked to respond to was the original purpose of STIR and Rental 100 in relation to affordability. So the original intent of the original intent of the program was to create a market response over and above what the city does to create social housing in the city. To create more units without the city having to directly invest capital or land resources into projects, and what to look at what the city could do without the federal or provincial government to aid in the delivery of affordable housing. So the aim of the original aim of the STIR program and the subsequent Rental 100 program is to stimulate the market to provide an affordable market solution for moderate income households that can't afford home ownership in our city, and therefore to increase moderate income options for moderate income earners in our city. So you can see from this slide that moderate income households, as defined by the Mayor's Task Force on Housing Affordability last year, is between 21,500 and 86,500 and the average income that required to buy an average one-bedroom unit in the city is $90,000. So for moderate income families and individuals to stay in the city, we're looking at housing options for people within that income range. So in addition to that, the aims of the STIR program were to create housing diversity in communities and to help meet sustainability and greener city goals. So the programs do that by creating social sustainability through mixed income neighborhoods, by creating economic sustainability by ensuring that we have affordable homes for key workers, and through environmental sustainability by ensuring that people can live near where they work. So on this slide, we've included the target for purpose-built rental housing, which is 5,000 out of the 11,000 rental units needed in our city. So that's about 40% of the supply of new homes. So all applications that come through STIR and Rental 100, the staff review proposed rents put forward by developers and see how those rents perform in relation to city averages. So we look at comparable rents in the locality, we look at the size of units, the location, and their design. So an appropriate comparable is other new rental housing in the city. In many areas of the city, including the West End, there hasn't been much new rental to make a comparison with, apart from the new rental that is found in condo buildings. The rents for this building that I propose are in the same range as other condo rental units, but these rents offer additional security of tenure to the residents, to future residents, as they are secured as rental for the life of the building. So whilst rented condos are an important comparable and they're an important part of our supply, they do not offer the same level of security of tenure. So new secured market rental housing as created through these two programs, they provide, they're not as affordable as condo ownership in the city, but they do provide more affordability than condo ownership in the city, but they are less affordable than existing rental in neighborhoods. So it's important for us to acknowledge this because 80% of the existing rental units were built more than 40 years ago. So two biggest drivers of affordability are the age and the location of units. So that's why, in addition to these two programs, it's important that the city continues to protect the existing rental stock through rate of change policies. And it's these policies that protect the affordability in the existing stock. So as a separate strategy from STIR and Rental 100, they work together to ensure that we're creating a new generation of rental buildings and rental units and protecting the existing units. So in addition to that, if the city was to look at creating additional affordability in units like this, how might we do that? So we would have to bring land or capital resources to a project like this to create social housing in order to create more affordability. And a comparison would be the recent offering of city land to the non-profits to create social housing that the city has just done with four sites. So we are very focused on trying to create housing for households with an average income in the city. But the only way to guarantee affordability for this income group is to build social housing, not market rental, which is, again, a different activity that the city is undergoing and different to the STIR, the aim of the STIR and the Rental 100 program. So we reported last week at Council our efforts around the creation of social housing. and STIR and Rental 100 are additional to this. They enable the market to do what it does best, which is create market options, and it frees up the city to focus on the creation of social housing in partnership with BC Housing and our non-profits. In addition, we realise the importance of affordability in communities like this, which is why we focused on delivering social housing through the community plan process that is ongoing in this neighbourhood.
Thank you for the responses to the questions from council from our last session on this. So I'm going to ask Madam Clerk for the summary of correspondence received since February the 5th, 2013. We'll get that before we dive into the speakers.
Since February 5th, 2013, Council has received the following correspondence related to this application. 14 letters in support for a total of 21 since referral to public hearing. 39 letters opposed for a total of 98 since referral to public hearing. And 3 letters regarding other matters for a total of 7 since referral to public hearing. These numbers represent correspondence received by the City Clerk's Office as of 3:45 p.m. today, Tuesday, February 19th.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Okay, so we will now commence hearing from speakers again, and I'll just give the overview in case some of you haven't been before Council to speak at public hearing. Speakers will have 5 minutes to make their remarks. I don't think we have any kind of time that will be visible there on the desk at the end, but I will be keeping track as well, and I can give speakers a heads up when they're close to their 5 minutes so they can wrap up their comments. We ask that you limit your comments to the merits of the zoning and bylaw applications that are being considered. Please that you state whether you are in support or opposed to the application. And there are people here speaking on behalf of 3 or more persons, or 3 or more organizations, then you have up to 8 minutes to speak. We ask that the 3 people or organizations that you're speaking for identify themselves here in the crowd, and that those people or organizations are not speakers themselves. That's how the 8-minute rule works. Speakers may speak once. You have further comments, you can put them in writing and either hand them in to the clerk, or you can email them to mayorandcouncil@vancouver.ca, and we need to receive those by the end of the speakers list, and they should not be more than 1,500 words worth of further comments. If you're using an interpreter this evening, we ask that both you and the interpreter come up before council together, and that every few sentences the interpreter does the translation. You don't have to use all of your 5 minutes, but you have that, and I will keep you posted as the time draws near. And you may have council questions from council. Councilors, just for your info, only 2 of these devices can be on at once. So maybe if you signal me that if you have questions, I'll keep a list. And then I'll recognize you when we get to questions, and you can hit your button. And that's basically the overview for speakers. So as I said, we're on speaker number 9 is where we're starting tonight, with a grand total of 62 registered. And our first speaker tonight is Bart Reed.
Sorry, will I go up here?
If you just sit, you can sit or stand at the head of the table there. If you're sitting, it'll be
easier.
It'll be louder into the
sure.
into the sound system here. After Mr. Reed is Susan Young, and then Tom Heffron.
All right, I'll try and be quick, but the first thing I would like to bring to the attention of City Council and also to city staff is this leaflet, which was put into my apartment building Thursday, it would have been February 14th, with a number of statements which are quite inaccurate, and I have difficulty with them because they illustrate much of what is wrong with many of the people who are in opposition to this. This document is sort of a good example of demagoguery in action, and also an expression of a reactionary populism. And by that, what I can tell you is that, and I'm willing to give this to council, this isn't my presentation, there are a number of mistruths, such as the one, for instance, whereby it states that that the city is in fact subsidizing these apartment units, which I believe is patently false. The second one which comes to my mind is the statement about loss of use. The people who make these claims state that not only will some views disappear, all views will disappear, total views will disappear. To me, that seems like a grotesque exaggeration, and it seems like a deliberate attempt to mislead the public and to scare the public. My final point is that there is no name attached to this document, and hundreds, if not thousands, of these documents have been distributed, and I find that uncouth. Not only do I find it uncouth, I was seriously displeased when I found this in my apartment building, because that meant someone gained unwarranted access into my apartment and then put this into my apartment space. So I actually regard this as a rather serious breach of protocol and privacy. I believe the people who are responsible for this document are in the room, and I would ask them to come forward out of the shadows to announce who they are and to justify the statements that they have made. I can give this to council members and to staff, and you can look at them and comment on them. But I think that this is really a serious breach of protocol and conduct, and definitely violates fair play. Having said that, I will do my presentation. And here goes. Four major concerns about the redevelopment of the Beach Towers complex come to mind. One has to do with the displacement of the existing tenants. The second has to do with aesthetics. The third, neighborliness. The fourth, parking. Beginning with displacement, council should make the protection of existing tenants a precondition for rezoning. There are some concerns about aesthetics as well, because the Beach Towers complex is one of the best and most sophisticated examples of high modernist planning and architectural expression to be found in the city. Some discomfort arises from any significant modification of the original design. Concerns about neighborliness primarily have to do with the infill on Harwood Street, as this part of the project may work against the existing street grain. Finally, there is some concern about parking. Is the increase in parking really necessary? What is the rationale for this, if indeed it needs to be increased? While not ignoring the concerns that have been mentioned, providing the issue of tenant displacement is adequately dealt with, what is also evident is that the improvements to the built environment and the creation of additional rental units proposed for this site compensate for and far exceed any of the negative impacts that may arise from this rezoning. From a functional standpoint, for symbolic reasons, and for reasons that have to do with simply being pragmatic, the project deserves support because this rezoning will advance existing civic policies that relate to creating a greener city and others such as the pedestrian initiatives currently underway in the West End, in addition to more recent policies that are concerned with the production of food and the creation of more affordable housing. Not only will scarce rental units be created, a much more livable and usable physical space will emerge that will make this development significantly more pedestrian friendly and much greener. At present, the existing open spaces on the site are unused, somewhat derelict, and largely abandoned most of the year. With care and proper oversight of the project by the city, these inactive spaces will become more active, green spaces will replace asphalt, space for the production of food will even appear as gardens, and improved public areas will animate dead space now occupied by automobiles. As well, since the most intense redevelopment will take place on a surface parking lot, from a functional standpoint, it is hard to find a site more suitable for redevelopment in the West End than this one. For this reason, there is little downside to the most salient feature of this redevelopment scheme, the nine-story tower, as it will result in the replacement of a surface parking lot with rental housing, improved pedestrian access, and more green space. Finally, in the broader context...
You're just wrapping up?
Yeah.
You're just,
you know, going out of time. How much time?
Sure. Actually, you have your 5 minutes. You have a question coming, and you just wrap up in a sentence.
No, I'll wrap up now because it's just a.
Thank you, Councillor Stevenson.
Thank you. I'm concerned to hear about the pamphlet that you brought, and I appreciate you bringing it. I would ask the staff to get copies for all of us.
Well, my concern is I think hundreds, perhaps even thousands, have been produced.
How do you know that?
Well, because I suspect they've been distributed to every single tenant suite in the Beach Towers project. I don't think I was the only one singled out. So under that calculation, I would assume at least 700 of them have been distributed.
Was it actually put under your door, or was it in the lobby?
Well, no, it's actually, I found it quite intrusive because it's not only was there no permission was granted for these people to enter the building, they actually came up to my floor, and they didn't leave it outside, but they actually pushed it under the door and into my living space, which I regard as a really, really intrusive act.
Could it be somebody in your building, though, that happens to agree with this?
I don't know. That's why I would like the people who are responsible for this document to come up and explain to me how they gained permission to come into the building and who put this into my suite, because I really did not like this.
Well, and especially if you say what's being said is not factual, but we'll get staff to listen to that. Can you just tell me where you live?
I live in the Beach Towers complex.
Oh, you live in the complex?
Yeah.
And just to be clear, you are in favor of this?
Yes.
As far as the displacement is concerned, staff has already addressed that previously, but at the end of tonight, when we ask questions of staff, I'll ask them to reiterate the issue of displacement. Yeah.
Well, a critical concern has to do with if this is approved, because they had a major reconstruction 2 or 3 years ago, and it made it a living hell for many of the tenants in the Beach Towers complex in terms of smoke and dust and jackhammers. For much of the summer, parts of the complex were almost unlivable. So I would hope, if council approves this rezoning, a very elaborate protocol will be put in place to prevent many of, or to mitigate many of the problems which will arise.
You raise a very good point, and the staff undoubtedly will note that, and we'll raise that again.
Yeah. And I guess finally, my concern again goes back to that leaflet, and I am rather concerned about it because of the number of copies which have been produced, and because there is no author assigned to it, and because the information is deliberately misleading. And I would ask the people who wrote it, and I believe they must be in this conclave here, to come out and.
Well, I think all of us are always suspicious when there's no author on anything. You know, that's the first thing you look for, and obviously that causes concern. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thanks. There may be other questions.
Okay, that's all the questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Reed. We are on to our next speaker. Maybe just check. Can everyone hear okay?
No.
Terrible. We have a couple of. We have an extra speaker or two here that we can.
It's actually
a little bit presentation on the screen to bring up. Okay.
I Mayor Robertson, Council, ladies and gentlemen, as a West End resident, property owner, and health professional, I welcome the opportunity to participate in the civic democratic process. It is my privilege to speak on behalf of my neighbors, Rita DeGroot, Monica Mears, and Jerry Paulson, who are also West End residents and property owners.
Excuse me, Ms. Young, were you speaking for them? Are they here tonight?
Yes.
Okay. If you could just raise your hands, okay? So you've got 8 minutes to work
with. Thank you.
Okay.
And bear with me, this is a huge
to me.
Beach Towers is an iconic site, much loved by Vancouver citizens and visitors alike. Situated within the stunningly beautiful natural setting of the ocean, English Bay, and Sunset Beaches, as well as Alexandra Park. It is a wonderful green space available for the enjoyment of all. And while it is located in the West End, I believe it is in reality a jewel in the backyard of all of Vancouver, a jewel worthy of diligent stewardship. I'm sorry, I can't seem to pronounce this. Thank you very much. Thank you. Originally, the Beach Tower site was designated as parkland, continuous with English Bay, Sunset Beach, Alexander Park, and a beautiful, wonderful park. The 1960s saw a rezoning of the site and building of the 4 high-rise towers, providing rental homes for 1,000 people. The rezone came with a condition. City Council required that the development's architectural design and building placement preserve a park-like green space, maintaining light, air, and view corridors. This design, even with increased density, has enabled enjoyment of this beautiful waterfront site with its incredible sense of space and light, refreshing ocean breezes, and lovely corridor views by all who pass by. We strongly oppose the Beach Towers proposal. We add our opposition to that of the majority of public responses received by the Mayor and Council for all the reasons documented on page 11 of the P4 policy report submitted January 7th of this year by the General Manager of Planning and Development Services. We add our voices to those of the 13,000 people who signed the petition calling on City Hall to stop spot rezoning and develop a comprehensive plan for the West End, and we are so delighted that that is in process. Our vision is to ensure our community's long-term interests are adequately considered. After careful review of the policy report, we highlight only some of our many serious concerns. We invite you to our beautiful neighborhood. Please walk down Cardero Street with us. Here we are at the corner of Cardero and Harwood. As we look at a 45-degree angle across to the ocean, can you appreciate the amazing sense of space, of light, even on the dreary day this photo was taken, fresh air and ocean views? If this proposal is approved, this would be your view. The impact of the footprint and design of this proposed 9-story mid-rise reads to us as a beam-like structure. Its mass will effectively eliminate the current light, air, and view corridors, filling in that wonderful sense of space. It threatens to blight this beautiful park like oceanfront property and will seriously compromise livability of the surrounding neighborhood. Despite the building's reported compliance with existing regulations, we wonder if this particular approach to densification and infill may in reality be associated with potential threats to safety. Through our experience of living in the West End, we are increasingly aware of difficulties emergency vehicles face as they attempt to navigate West End streets and position themselves to perform their duties effectively. On careful read of the policy report, we do not see assessment of the impact of proposed structural architectural design and building placement as regards ease of access of emergency vehicles. We are intrigued with the architectural solutions driven by the current Beach Towers proposal, one proposing infill to achieve further density. The mass of the building is made even more prominent by the jutout at the lower floors. Compare the existing architectural solution driven by a requirement to preserve view, light, and airflow and that wonderful sense of space. A solution that that approval of beach tower proposal would actually close in. Could further architectural solutions be found to reduce the footplate of this intrusive structure? Can its mass be reduced from the first to the top floor of the building, should it be approved? Building townhouses along Beach Avenue road edge will create a wall of obstruction and eliminate the existing plaza. Even more concerning is the potential negative impact on health and well-being associated with building homes in such close proximity to a busy roadway that's only going to get busier. People living in these homes would be subject to road noise, car exhaust, fumes, and privacy issues. A potential safety issue warrants attention. As documented in the policy report, 58% of the proposed development includes two-bedroom units, and as such are considered family units, according to the policy report. Proposed townhouses are all two-bedroom units, and these are presumably the occupied by families with children, possibly even young children.
As regards proposed new amenities, it is not clear what would be built and how issues of child safety would be addressed. A particular concern is if a pool should be included in these amenities. Although the policy report cites the High Density Housing for Families with Children guideline of March 24th of 1992 as one of the relevant council policies, we do not find any comments about how the Beach Towers application proposes to address child safety. This has been traditionally a very adult-oriented complex, and now will be presumably occupied by a lot of families with children. As regard building of the townhouses around the base of Columbus House Tower on Harwood, during the February Town Hall, the applicant pointed out that there was one of two existing driveways that would need to be relocated to the west side of the property. Reviewing the plan on the yellow sign that has been appropriately posted, it appears that the proposed driveway would necessitate removal of this mature tree from the city boulevard. Further, the lovely garden view enjoyed by the Vivian Court tenants pictured in this slide would be replaced by a driveway directly below their balcony and windows. In conclusion, we register our strong opposition to the Beach Towers proposal. We call on council to give serious consideration to ensuring due diligence is applied to child safety issues across the site, with particular reference to the proposed Beach Avenue townhouses. Secondly, to reduce the footplate of the Harwood Street mid-rise from the first to the top floor. Third, ensure emergency vehicle access is assured. Four, enact stewardship. Please honor the West End plan and stop spot rezoning. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And we have Councillor Stevenson first and Councillor Carr.
Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate your.
Thank you.
That's okay. Okay, thank you very much for coming and appreciate your presentation. You said you were representing yourself and three other property owners?
Correct.
And where would your properties be located?
We live in 1315 Cardero Street.
1315?
Cardero.
All of you?
That's correct.
And are you at all directly impacted by this, or is as far as views? Or?
It's directly impacting the streetscape of our neighborhood and the character of our neighborhood globally. It impacts each of us somewhat differently, given the position of our apartment complex. Mine is probably the most impacted, although I live on the first floor, which is actually a story and a half, and actually this view is my view.
Okay, so it's a direct impact.
For me, but the bigger impact is the approach to planning and development of our West End community. That's the impact that we're speaking about, and the process that we are delighted to be engaged in that's currently occurring. So it's really our impact on our community and the streetscape that we so enjoy and that people enjoy. When I moved here in 2000 from the prairies, I had known about this area for many years and was delighted that I was able finally to live here. And now I see it being really altered.
No, I understand that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's having an impact.
Thank you for your question.
Have you seen this brochure that was passed around? I don't know if the gentleman before you spoke that. Have you?
Yes, I've seen it.
You've seen this as well. Was it put into your apartment?
Okay.
Okay. You wouldn't know where it came from.
I don't know actually who developed it, but I have seen it. Yes.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Councillor Carr.
Yes. Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Is it possible for me to move this so I can speak?
Yeah, you can.
At the button.
Okay, thanks very much, Ms. Yang. At the very beginning of your presentation, you mentioned that there was a condition of approval that was regarding protecting or preserving the park-like space and open air, etc. Did you read the original approval that was at the council table? Is that how you got that condition of approval?
No. And condition perhaps could be requirement. But I learned that from the interview with the original architect and the interview that you saw that presented in the last time, and also informally to actually a neighbor who actually was involved in that process.
Okay, so this comes from, and that was I believe it was one of the first presentations that we had at the first night of this public hearing, is that right? That tape, okay, so perhaps I can review that. I just want to make sure that I've captured down the words that you took down from that, which was to preserve park-like space, views, light, and airflow. Were those the great? Okay, thanks. I really appreciate your presentation.
Thank you, Councillor Carr, and thank you again for coming to speak for yourself and on behalf of the other three. So our next speaker is Tom Heffron. He is followed by Ermi Hoppenrath and Neil Matson. Diana Matrick would be speaker number 15. Welcome, Mr. Heffron.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Right in the middle.
The button in the middle there. Perfect.
Can you hear me? Please have. Thanks. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor, members of council. My name is Tom Heffron. I am a retired federal public servant. I have lived in West End for over 25 years, first as a renter, and for the last 11 years as an owner in the Diane Court Co-op. I am speaking in opposition to the rezoning, and I should add that my personal view would be unaffected by the proposal as it's presently structured, but that does not in any way lessen my opposition to the proposal. For 3 years now, my neighborhood has been under the cloud of this rezoning proposal and its predecessor. Many of us have worked hard to have our voices heard and to call attention to our concerns. Now, as I look at the result of this long and, for many people, stressful process, I do have to ask what's wrong with this picture. And the summary answer I would give to that question is that the social costs of the proposal greatly exceed the social benefits. The costs are many, ranging from erosion of property values and privacy in the adjacent buildings to the infill, and the undermining of a heritage site that was carefully designed to balance height and openness. I know that other speakers will continue to address what I would call the cost side in more detail, and there is a great deal to say in this regard. But also, what about the benefits? And here I have particular difficulty. What I see is the creation of new luxury rental units on a privileged site for a relatively small number of high-income individuals, and I'm troubled by the fact that all the negatives of the proposal and the disruption to many people is not offset by what I would consider a significant social good. We're not talking about a new hospital facility or a hospice or a new library branch or anything remotely of that caliber that would perhaps offset in some way the very large number of negatives. The problem further is that you might not know many of the negative factors from the various proposals that have been made and from the input of the various committees. In my view, the costs to the proposal have been systematically understated, in some cases entirely ignored. The infill, which is the presumed benefit, is treated something like an axiom. It's as if it were a good thing no matter what. One can sense that the owner's imperative to add density to this site overrules all other considerations, and the only discussion is about details. In summary, then, it's not a very nice picture, and as a citizen, I find it a disturbing one, and also one that seems dangerously close to being accepted. Mr. Mayor, members of council, the right thing to do, in my view, is to say no to this rezoning proposal. But I will add, if density must be added, for reasons that I personally fail to understand, I would entreat you to please enter into a new dialogue with the owner of Beach Towers with the intent of going back to the drawing board. And this time I would hope that one could produce a result that is not so damaging, so intrusive, and so destructive to our neighborhood. Thank you.
Okay. Councillor Carr, you have a question?
Yeah, thank you very much for your presentation. You talked about weighing sort of cost benefits, and said that one of the that or social goods or social losses, in another way of putting it, and that one of the supposed benefits of this proposal is rental, but you refer to it as luxury rental for high income. How important is the pricing of the rental to you? If the rental unit were in fact lower, within line of an average income earner, for example, in the West End, would that be enough to mitigate the loss of the erosion of property values, the heritage, the other things that you said that were sort of on the balance sheet?
That would certainly boost the benefit side, in my view. I still think there has to be real re-examination of what I'm calling the cost side, particularly with the most recent design that's been put forward. I do find it particularly intrusive. I think regardless of anything else, a better design could be found. And in all honesty, I thought the original Point Tower was preferable to what we have now as far as leaving some openness and some permeability come up to the site.
Okay, so of all the factors then, if I can conclude that it really is the loss of usecape and openness and air, etc., that is the most disturbing to you?
I think there's also, there's that abstract sort of notion of neighborliness, but just the quality of the neighborhood. And I think I would echo what other speakers have said. This is a neighborhood that truly belongs to everybody in Vancouver. And this is not any old site. It's an iconic site. It's well known to many, many people. Cardero Street is a bicycle path. I see the school groups from Lord Roberts School going past my street on the way to Stanley Park. All these people are impacted by this.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Councilor.
Thanks, Councillor Carr. Councillor Stevenson?
Thank you. Just just on the same lines as Councillor Carr, I think she's picking up on the question that was asked when we adjourned, or one of the last speakers, who was opposed to this basically for exactly the same reason as yours. But then when he was asked if this was social housing that was going in, low income, subsidized social housing for low-income people would be able to live there, and it was social housing or the federal government coming in or whatever, would you then agree to this? And he said, yes, how could I possibly be against poor people coming and living there in social housing? Would that be the same for you? If this was social housing and not market rental housing that we were building, would you then be in agreement with this?
I guess the simple, once again, I would say if it were something like social housing, that would certainly raise the benefit side. But I still would remain very concerned with the disruptive effects of the infill. And I wouldn't want that to be disregarded. I think both sides need to be addressed. And right now, the cost side, in my view, is very, very high.
Well, we don't have to worry too much, does it look like the federal government is coming forth anytime soon with social housing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Heffern. Thanks for coming to speak to council. Here, Ermi Hoppenrath is our next speaker, followed by Neil Mattson, number 14, and number 15, Diana Matrick. You might need to hit the button on your. There you are. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Ermi Hoppenrath, and I live at Diane Court at the
I can't hear you.
All right, what do I do?
If you just scoot it up closer. That would...
Can you hear me now?
No, no.
What do I do? I'll pick it up. I live at Diane Court, corner of Harwood and Cardero. I bought my apartment almost 7 years ago with the intention of spending my retirement years there. I am opposed to the rezoning application and redevelopment of Beach Towers. There are several reasons why I'm opposed. I shall briefly mention four. Number one, if the redevelopment goes ahead, it will have a major negative impact on all surrounding buildings, and you've heard that before, in fact, the entire neighborhood. Besides loss of view, loss of light, increased pollution, and other factors previously mentioned, it would add a huge pressure on an already stretched infrastructure, this being the second most dense residential block in the West End. 2% of West End residents live in the Beach Tower complex. Number two, the heritage and architectural value, which means the open space features, are essential components to the character of the site. Beach Towers is of heritage value for its contribution to the development of the West End as a cultural landscape and for its architectural design, which is timeless. As you have all seen on the video clip with architect Ojers Khans, the arrangements of the towers take advantage of views beneath and between structures. Infill of the base of the towers and the open space is particularly the suggested bulky massive building B with its huge floor plate would destroy this. I cannot possibly agree with the statement made by the planning department during last meeting that infill will enhance the heritage value. How can it? It will destroy it. And as Oyer Karn said, this is not infill, this is overfill. Number three, why destroy all that which is so unique to Vancouver if these rental units will be unaffordable for most low and even mid-income families? I understand that the primary goal of this whole undertaking is affordable housing, and I quote from the policy report, P4, page 15, it will contribute to the city's affordable housing goals by providing a net increase of 133 units to Vancouver's inventory of long-term market rental units. Now, 78 of these 133 units, in other words, 58%, are two-bedroom units, and they are supposed to attract families with children. I quote again from the report, rental housing for families with children is a high priority for the city. The two-bedroom units, and I believe a family with children will require two bedrooms, are to be rented for $1,900 to $2,720, and that's on page 13 in the report. What low-income or even mid-income family can afford that? Based on figures compiled by Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation, the average two-bedroom suite in Metro Vancouver rented for $1,261 in 2012. I feel we need more units in that price range to help low and mid-income people. Now, number four and my last point, it is also mentioned in the report that since this application is for infill development, it will not displace rental housing or tenants. However, I have, together with Kate Braid, who spoke on February the 5th, canvassed renters of Beach Towers, meeting them personally to find out, do they care? Well, they certainly care. And some of the renters would consider moving out rather than enduring 3 years of construction and ultimately being boxed in. So there might be a substantial loss of tenants. Is that desirable when all they need is a boiler replacement, as was mentioned, and reduced air leakage within existing buildings?
But Ms. Hoppenrath, you're at your 5 minutes, if you can wrap up.
To stop the project altogether for all the reasons mentioned. Thank you.
Good timing. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. No questions from council. Thank you for being here to speak. And Neil Mattson is our next speaker. Followed by Diane, number 15, Diana Matrick, number 16, Eleanor Hadley.
I guess this is still working. My name is Neil Mattson.
I also live at Diane Court. I'm a retired special education teacher and special education administrator. I'm very familiar with consultation and collaboration in my business, and I'm looking at this process through that lens. And I feel that this is an unnecessarily combative process, and I feel that the reason that that's happened is that the consultation has been so poor throughout the process. When you take a look at the size of Beach Towers compared with all of the other buildings in the neighborhood, you realize that they're actually absolutely enormous buildings. Ermi, my neighbor, mentioned that 2% of the West End lives in Beach Towers, and that's based on the notion that the rental manager told us there were over 1,000 people living there, and with 50,000 people in the West End, we're talking about close to 2%. And yet, 3 years into the process, the first direct information that they received from the city was an invitation to this hearing, which was delivered to their doors before the last hearing that was on that. And they have, in fact, not been directly included before that time. To my mind, this is quite unreasonable because this is an infill property. This isn't a separate property that's being developed from nothing. And if this were a single-family neighborhood, we can be certain that people wouldn't be talking about building property in their yard without being very clear about what their beliefs were and what their expectations were of this building and whether they were in favor of it or not. When we looked at the consultation that happened, we were faced with a number of situations where we were not allowed to speak. The Heritage Committee met after the SOS was created by a man hired by the developer. This statement of significance we felt truly did not represent how important the buildings really are. And when we tried to speak with the Heritage Committee, we were told that we were not allowed to make representation to the Heritage Committee before or during their deliberations. Similarly, with the Urban Design Panel, there isn't a method by which we can have impact on the Urban Design Panel. And we're the people that actually have an appreciation for this development and for beach towers, and yet we weren't able to speak in the meeting. I think that the 13,000 people that signed the Wen petition, I appreciate the fact that City Hall tried to appoint a West End Advisory Committee, and then we weren't allowed to speak to them when it was their turn to fill out their form about what they thought of this. And so we end up continually feeling that we're being cut out of this process, that we can observe it, but that we're not really being heard, and certainly nobody is ever getting back to us when we go to these meetings. And so it isn't surprising to me, when we take a look at what the result of this is that we have four-story townhouses across the face of Beach Avenue, and those townhouses completely obliterate any of the views that are through the bases of the buildings, which is the only reason that they are in fact tolerable, because you actually look through the bottom of the buildings. The gardens are almost completely gone, filled with townhouses around Douglas House and an amenity building with a swimming pool in the front. So there's almost no green space left at all in the building. It's all plaza. And then this glazing of the bases of the towers completely destroys the whole point of the towers, is that they're sitting on stilts and they are in fact not glazed. The big tower, the big building in the middle, is 80 feet long, 80 feet wide by 100 feet long. This building has a bigger floor print than any building on Harwood Street to Burrard and any building on Cardero Street to Robson. It's bigger than any building nearby it, and in fact the floor plate of that building is bigger than any of the beach towers themselves. And this is infill. We're talking about putting 100,000 square feet on top of the existing 400,000 square feet for an even 500,000, and it's described as infill. When I moved here in 1972, I was thrilled to go to beach towers. I thought they were brilliant. And I watched the development of False Creek, and I watched Fairview, and I watched Cole Harbor, and I watched the planned development of Olympic Village and Yale Town and Georgia Street. And I believed that my city and that the planning department in my city was out there actively looking to make sure that all of the citizens had a planned view with air and space and things and they could see around them. And when it comes to my neighborhood, someone's going to put this great big monster right in the middle of a building and treat it as if it was some kind of a vacant lot. And I just feel that this is such a disgrace that I would certainly hope you'll recognize that I'm speaking against this zoning.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. We have a question from Councillor Carr.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. And thank you very much for your presentation. I'm intrigued by what you said at the very beginning, which was a comment about unnecessarily combative process and your experience around public consultation. So you described the public consultation, or lack thereof, that happened over time. In your mind, what would have constituted a good public consultation process that you think might have led to a well-supported, community-supported outcome?
My background is in education, and I have to go back to what I know works for what I was doing. It really does have to do with ensuring that people know that they're being heard. Through all of the processes that we went through, we never saw any changes in this building. If anything, it became worse during the course of the consultation. I remember when the first tower was announced, and everybody said, no, don't do a tower. And now I'm hearing some people saying, well, you didn't want a tower, so now we're going to do a block. And to me, it was that they weren't actually listening to what we were saying when we say, no, we don't want a tower. It's like somebody knocking on your door, and they open the door, and they've got a gun, they're going to shoot you. And you say, no, don't shoot. And he picks up a knife and stabs you to death. He said, well, you told me. I think when people are saying, no, don't want a tower, the answer is, well, what's wrong? Tell us what the problem is. Don't just say, okay, then we won't do a tower, we'll do this. Because I think if you listen closely to what those people were saying, they were probably saying, I don't want to lose the garden. I don't want to lose the open space. To my mind, Beach Towers, the amenity, is the space around it. They talk about suburban architecture being about buildings and urban architecture being about the space between the buildings. And this is such a grotesque invasion of what was created in those buildings. And I'm convinced that 100 years from now, Beach Towers is going to be an awful lot more important to people than our Edwardian architecture. I think that Beach Towers is going to be recognized as the genesis of Vancouverism, and I would hate to think that they're going to have to kind of clear away these carbuncles that are put on it so that they get some kind of understanding of what it was meant to be and why we were so in love with this idea that we made a whole city about it. And I feel that the consultation failed because we didn't feel heard. We were treated, I think, not very politely, because people know better than we do at every turn.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for coming to speak. Thanks, Mr. Mattson. So next up is Diana Matrick, speaker number 15. And she's followed by Eleanor Hadley and Roderick Woolner. Good evening.
Good evening. My name's Diana Matrick, and I have 5 points to make. Number one, I would like to make it very clear that I am not against development in any way. I oppose this development because the mid-rise greatly diminishes the sense of openness between the existing towers. The majority of us live in small spaces, and for our psychological health, we derive our sense of space from the openness between the buildings outside. The massiveness of the mid-rise building combined with its height closes off the sense of space between the towers. Number two, since the sense of openness is important to the quality of our lives in the West End, this proposal should be put on hold until we have a collective discussion as part of the West End community plan. As a community, we need to have a discussion of what spaces we would like protected by the terms defined by the new community plan, and it will be approved on November the 6th. I'm very involved in this process and will be working to encourage more people to become involved. Number three, the West End Mayor's Advisory Committee. This was a flawed consultation process and a travesty. Why was I kicked out of a WEMAC meeting with other West End residents? After a busy workday, I made a point to travel to City Hall to attend this meeting. Inaccurate information on the WEMAC scorecard is an indication of a flawed public consultation process. Given that there were no WEMAC meetings held in the West End, residents could not comment on the terms that were used.
Oops, I lost you there.
Residents could not comment. Given that there were no WEMAC meetings held in the West End, residents could not comment on the terms that were used for the scorecard. The categories on this scorecard were used to guide the decisions made by the developer and architects without public input.
The categories on the scorecard appear to be defined
by the select group of West End residents appointed by the mayor. It is this select group that had meetings with developers and architects without the public being able to attend. I find it interesting that these appointees have all supported these projects. One of the co-chairs is now a co-chair of the Vision Vancouver West End Caucus. How objective is the information on the WEBAT scorecard from the perspective of large numbers of West End residents? The WEBAT scorecard is not a substitute for a West End community plan that has had input from large numbers of West End residents. Number four, affordability. How is this going to be affordable? I couldn't afford this numerous years ago. Every year, rents go up by 1% to 5%. I was a renter in the West End for 4 years. Right now, a 625 square foot apartment at Beach Towers with a north view on the 14th floor is $1,300 per month. A 500 square foot apartment with an ocean view is $1,275 per month. This only includes heat and hot water. If the medium income is $38,000 a year in the West End, how is that affordable? You are creating gentrification by building expensive towers such as Maxine's and the one on Colmox and Broughton. The high transient patterns of the West End inflates rents. Why are there so many rental units available and owners are creating ways to attract renters? We keep hearing about the need of more rental units in the West End in order to stabilize the rents in the existing older buildings. This relationship may not apply to the West End rental situation. The impact of programs like STIR on West End affordability issues, given our dense population in a neighborhood with an established pattern of high transient, creates the conditions for a continuation of high rents. After controlling for factors related to normal market forces, the fact is, in the West End, we have large numbers of people constantly moving out. The rental turnover rates means the rents keep going up. New renters pay more than the longer-term renters. Therefore, because of the established high transient pattern, rents may not be controlled only by normal market forces. The rents go up, and the rents just keep going up. Will the higher rents in the newer buildings accelerate increases in the rents of the existing older buildings due to the high transient pattern in the West End? Number five, although this is not directly related to the details of the development proposal, I would like it recorded that I was upset that my and other people's public information was on the city's website for 14 days. This is a breach of trust and goes against my charter of rights and freedoms. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If you have a question, Councillor Carr?
Yes, thanks very much for coming. And I think we'll maybe ask a question later to staff around the private information on the website. I'm not sure what the protocol is around that. But regarding something you said very early on, and you mentioned that there was, I'm trying to get it captured correctly, the co-chair of the West End Mayor's Advisory Committee then went on to become a chair of Vision, the political vision.
The co-chair of WEMAC is now the co-chair of the Vision Vancouver West End Caucus.
Okay. And at the time that WEMAC was participating, we ask others about that too, but at the time that WEMAC was advising, I think they our staff in early in introducing this proposal said that the developer, I believe I have notes on this, met with WEMAC, and I asked a question about other West End resident groups. Was there any input by WEMAC that you know of that was timed at the times when that was positive around this proposal, that was timed when this individual was still the co-chair of WEMAC?
Yes. So when there were, I forget how many people, I think roughly maybe eight, and then I know quite a number of people only went to one or two meetings, and then they realized that the truth wasn't really getting out there to the West Enders. For example, I'm very involved in the community, and I didn't even know anything about it.
We're straying
it way just
off.
Seemed very way secretive. Off. Everything was so hush-hush. And then when I, like, for example, when I came to a meeting, I was told to leave.
So I'm going to just caution you that this isn't actually directly related to the application that's before us. You're talking about an advisory committee that was appointed by council several years ago, and that that was actually was involved in reviewing and contacting a number of different projects as they came forward with proposals, but certainly not directly involved in this application process.
And, well, it would have been directly involved.
No, it's not. Advisory committees cannot be directly involved in the public hearing process.
Yeah, report is in the I read
the reports with fine-tuned old, and I was shocked at some of it. Well, most of it. It was a flawed process, and I think that the best process will be our That's community not. Plan. And until the community plan is finished, and that we, as a community, we input all the information that we would like to see. And for example, February the 26th, there's a meeting at, I believe it's at the Coastal Plaza Hotel, from 5:30 to 8 o'clock, and a lot of those policies with our input will be the policies in our community plan. And I'm actually very involved in the community plan with Holly and John. There's something called the Network Champion or something like that.
Neighborhood Champion.
Okay.
Yeah,
Neighborhood Champion.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much. I very much appreciate coming.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, thanks, Councillor Carr. Councillor Jiang, you have a question?
Councillor Carr, turn off. There you go. Okay.
Thank you very much for coming, and I'm a little disturbed about what you said about your personal information being up on the city website for 14 days. And I kind of glanced over at our staff, and we're not quite sure what you're referring to. Could you give us some details of what personal information was there? Was your name, phone number?
Okay.
I don't know.
Well,
what happened
is I think it was on Thursday. I received an email from a complete stranger. I've never met this person before. And she said, "Hi, Diana, do you realize that all of your private information is on the city website?" So I was quite shocked. So I went on the website, and I could see that, for example, my name, my email address, and my phone number was on, it was all comments.
Where on the city website?
It was when you go to February the 5th. Because what happened is I wasn't able to come on February the 5th to the original meeting. So I sent in my comments February the 1st. So if you look at the meeting, and there's the agenda and minutes, and then you can scroll down, and then you can see.
So it's your
for
comments.
Example, there's support, oppose, right. And then one of my comments was opposing it. And then it wasn't just myself, but I think it was maybe six other people.
Okay, so I think I understand that it was the comment about the proposal you submitted, and then that cannot be unauthored. Right, because then it's anybody can post something. So I understand that they've always put down who said it, because that's what whenever we get a letter to council, it's always come to signed. Otherwise, we disregard it. It's like this leaflet. You get this and you go, well, what? So when you send us something, right, then it has your identifier, so we know who the author is. So that way, we know it's legitimate.
Oh yes, I can understand that. But what happened is it was my name, my email address, and then my phone number. Usually what they do is they black out the email address and the phone number.
Again.
I don't have a problem with someone knowing my name and that I oppose or I support something.
It sounds like there may have been a problem with not blacking out your personal information.
Exactly.
Just should just be your name that's attributed to the
and
comments.
And I phone the city court. I mean, I don't want these people to lose their job or anything. I just want you to know that this shouldn't be happening.
Right.
And I understand it's a mistake and mistakes happen, mm-hmm. and I don't have a problem with that, but I think that you should know that my or our public information shouldn't be out there just for anyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, thanks for your patience with that that oversight, which
may be part of the public record.
Yeah, it has to be part of the public record to have your name on there. It sounds like there
was a
mistake
that.
On the on having that other information visible. Okay, any other questions? We're good. Thank you very much for coming to speak. I'm glad you could make it tonight. Eleanor Hadley. Okay. Eleanor Hadley is our next speaker. She's here and in gear. Speaker number 16, and she's followed by speaker number 17 is Roderick Woolner, followed by Donald Archibald, number 18. Speaker number 19, I believe, David Semzizen. It's my best guess at that name.
Carol Foster's trying to get your attention.
Oh, where you left? In here?
Right there. Welcome back, Ms. Hadley.
Without the public hearing aid that you provide for me, I haven't been able to hear a word that's going on at this meeting. So I'm very frustrated and stressed out and at the disrespectful manner of this Vision Council toward the West End citizens. 2 weeks ago, the meeting for Beach Towers was supposed to start at 6, and it didn't start till 9:30, and I have to leave tonight. And they didn't have the hearing aid until 10 o'clock tonight. Another gimmick. Nothing functions. So we are here looking, I'm sitting over there looking at your backs. I doubt very much whether this is a lawful meeting for you to make such a great decision for the West End citizens. I am strongly opposed to vision blocking all the air spaces and setbacks in the West End, blocking, creating a jungle of towers. The reason their Beach Towers has one tower on each block, because that was the bylaw to prevent a jungle of towers. And they actually extended their towers. I remember in 1992, a bylaw was passed so that a park would be created for every 1,000 new residents. Somebody changed it, politicians, it changed it to allow developers to pay us cash in lieu of parks. Well, where is all that tax money? Because there are a lot of new residents and new development going on in the West End. I find this meeting very disrespectful and very it actually shows up to everyone here the competence or incompetence of this Vision Council to run our city. And I am very upset about what you are doing. The West End is a very important place and function for the whole city of Vancouver. where they come to use English Bay and Stanley Park. And now they will be facing a wall of developments. I have been trying to find one good thing that this Vision Party has done for Vancouver City, and I haven't found one.
You're hard to please.
I've been looking very hard.
You are even grabbing the donations community centers get. You're grabbing their money, the donations.
Ms. Hadley, that's so far off topic.
Is all about money, and the citizens don't know what you're doing with all that money. So I'm strongly opposed to a wall of cement being built around our English Bay and Stanley Park, and denying the citizens of West End a healthy place to live in with setbacks and air spaces. So I am too upset to say anything more, but I believe that this council has shown that they are not capable to run our beautiful city, and they are destroying it. They're concentrating on developers and the development of this city.
That is your time, Ms. Hadley.
Developers, foreign developers, and foreign workers.
Okay, Ms. Hadley, you're at your time.
They're rushing here like it's paradise. These developers, they can build anywhere, anything, nothing to stop them.
Madam Clerk, I don't think she can hear me.
Destroying all our bylaws to make this a beautiful city and a healthy city.
Thank you, Madam. Thank you, Ms. Hadley. Okay. And just for clarity, on February 5th, we had two items in this public hearing that we had to go through before we got to this, which is why we started at this item at about 9:15 p.m. on February the 5th. And as Ms. Hadley outlined, we did have technology problems that night as well, which continue to be a challenge in the chamber with the audiovisual system. She raised a point about this being lawful. I just want to make sure Madam City Clerk did consult the city solicitor and just confirmed that the process that we're conducting here is fully in keeping with the city bylaws and procedure bylaw specifically. And we are recording, and we're not able to broadcast on the web as usual, but we have all of the proceedings being recorded. Okay, so we are on. Speaker number 17, Roderick Woolner, followed by Donald Archibald. Welcome, Mr. Woolner.
This presentation was prepared to be shown on an overhead projector, which we don't have available to us now, so...
Can we not put it on the projector?
Not going to be
this wasn't available.
Review
in PowerPoint
this information with us.
The Elmo.
I'd like to acknowledge that you each have a copy of my paper.
Okay, we all have copies.
You see the flow sheet? Is that infamous shadow? Anyway, good evening, Mr. Mayor, councilors, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Robert Woolman, and I am adding my voice to the overwhelming public opposition to this application. I wish to dispute the validity of a number of assertions made by the City Planning Department in their latest report to City Council. These comments are concerning pages 45 and 46 of the applicant's submission dated May 17, 2012, showing neighbors' views and shadow study. Both of these topics have been mentioned by public presenters on numerous occasions, and I therefore suggest that they be afforded appropriate due diligence. I'd like to make a quote here from the report. It's a general statement. The quotation is, "An extensive analysis of the proposed form of development has been conducted, including an assessment of its urban design and neighborliness." And then more specifically related to the shadow study, I quote again, "Shadowing measured at the equinox, March and September, the proposed building does not shadow any public open space, but will trace the front yards of the existing apartment buildings along the north side of Harwood Street during the early afternoon. By mid-afternoon, the length of the existing Tower A overlaps the proposed building shadow. The shadow impact generated from the proposal does not generate any significant impact and falls within an acceptable range." Now, the shadows that are being referred here are the shadows being thrown or projected from the nine-story tower on the corner of Harwood and Cordero. So I would like you to take a look at this first study with me. What you'll see here in this latest edition on page 46 of the applicant's submittal are these three shadow studies. What I would like to draw your attention to is the stunning similarity of the first shadow study with the one directly below it, the second shadow study with the one directly below it, and so on to the third one. What I would conclude here is this: the first set of diagrams are almost identical to the second set of diagrams, and therefore 50% of this submittal is redundant. In addition to that, the angles I'm showing on the first three set of diagrams, the angles of 137, 122 on the left-hand side for 10 a.m. on equinox, 173 and 159 for the 12 o'clock sample, and the 212 degrees and 158 degrees for the 2 o'clock sample. These are deviations. What I'm suggesting here is that the applicant has falsely manipulated the information and produced shadows here which are just not real. You can see the deviation here. You've got 15 degrees on the first item, 14 degrees on the second, and 14 degrees on the third at 2 p.m. There seems to be some kind of constant offset here, but what that offset is, I have no idea. If you look at the next sheet, couple of sheets, you'll see that the numbers I'm referring to on the first sheet are actually the yellow highlighted numbers on this snapshot from an azimuth and altitude table, which is readily available on the internet, by the way. So you'll see at 10 a.m. that angle I'm quoting of 137 is shown in this table.
at 12 o'clock noon, 173.6, and on the next sheet, 2 p.m., 211.9, 212 degrees, as opposed to those that I'm suggesting the applicant has used, which have no relation to the actual angles on that particular date at those particular times. In addition to that,
Mr. Woolner, you're over your 5 minutes, so I could ask you to, if you could wrap up.
That's not possible.
It is. I've been running a timer here, so if you could wrap up, but you're going to have a question. You will have a question from Councillor Carr coming for sure. But if you wanted to wrap up in a sentence, we'll move on to the question.
You make your report based on this information.
This is alleged information, and well, to be fair with to all the speakers, there are dozens and dozens of speakers waiting.
You know very well that I'm exposing faulty information here, and you're shutting me down.
Mr. Woolner, I don't know very well that is the fact, that you have 5 minutes as everyone else has their 5 minutes, and if we are to breach that process, then surely there are questions about the fairness of the public hearing process. So I'm asking you to take a minute to wrap up, and you have questions from Councillor Carr coming.
Excuse me.
Mr. Woolner?
I want to give my time to
And that's, sorry, that's not part of the public hearing process, and we have to stick to the rules. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry, I need to remind you that this is a quasi-judicial process that's governed by the procedure bylaw, which is in the Vancouver Charter. We do this by the book, to be fair. These rules have been in place for many years, and they're fine-tuned. In this case, it's a five-minute rule. It's been in place for many, many years. And yes, if we don't have more interruptions, if people will respect your finishing up here, and we'll be moving on to the questions from Councillor Carr. But we're at 7 minutes and 15 seconds.
Discussion of shadows. I also have a lot of information here and discrepancies which show up for site lines of view.
Point of order,
a string of erroneous data that has been used by the planning department to arrive at its conclusions. I therefore challenge this council to dismiss the planning department's report and to reject this application.
Thank you, Mr. Woolner. And just a reminder, all of this information is submitted to council, and council has the opportunity to ask staff into clarifying questions related to it. Councillor Carr, questions?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Mayor. I am looking over the proposal you made. I understand the first points are based on sort of inaccuracy, but by the time I get to page 5, where you have a shadow study indicated. Is this shadow study one that shows that indeed the three-floor building behind
the... Could you hold it for me?
Yeah, this is the one that looks like this.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a cross-section looking northwest on Howard Street.
Right.
Shows the proposed nine-story building on the left-hand side here.
Yes.
And the building directly across the street on the north side of Harwood.
And the top line, where it shows mostly in shadow, what is that top trajectory of shadowing? What is that particular time of year? Or
This sort of refers back to the previous sheet.
And the tables?
No, the one on
yes.
This one, right?
Right.
Which is which shows the shadow across the top of this building, just hitting the threshold of the building across the street. It's almost exactly there. In order to do that, the sun would need to be at an angle of 45 degrees. The actual angle of the sun on the equinox, which is 20th of March at 2 p.m., is actually 36 degrees. There is no 45 degree angle of the sun on that date, any time during the day. So what I'm trying to illustrate here, that there again is a discrepancy in these angles, which make the data completely erroneous. You can see that the shadow that's drawn by the applicant falls directly on the threshold of that building, but in actual fact, the real shadow falls a further 36 feet on the ground front.
So it doesn't have to be there.
And that's to the back of the building.
Yeah, or down the side.
Okay, so can you just summarize this into the finish, not as a what's an angle?
Azimuth is really the compass angle?
Yes.
Compass angle of the sun?
Yeah. Is it your contention that given this data, that there will be more shadowing on the building behind the 9-story building at Equinox?
Yeah, I'm sure it in. I don't know if you have a color copy there.
I don't have a color copy, but I thought I'd.
You have this one. This should.
No, we have the top color. It's not an application,
Well, on this sheet, if you want to take a look at this, it's the orange section is the actual shadow, as opposed to the dark gray, which is the client's version. I mean, the applicant's version, excuse me.
So in other words, there is more shadowing.
Absolutely.
And I'm sorry, did you state at the beginning of your talk your experience in this field?
Yeah, I've been working in architectural lighting and photography for 16 years. I have a BFA from Parsons School of Design. I have a BFA from Parsons School of Design in New York and a master's degree in architecture from the Southern California Institute of Architecture in Los Angeles.
Thank you.
Councillor Stevenson is next.
Thank you very much.
Councillor Carr, if you could turn off your mic, that frees it up for Councillor Stevenson.
Thank you very much. And obviously, thank you for coming. The questions, the statements that you raise are disconcerting, to say that this has been falsely manipulated and that the data is erroneous. Obviously, we're going to have to direct this to staff, and they will come back with a discussion of what you proposed and their analysis, and
hopefully they will.
They definitely, it's not hopeful, we will direct them to do that. You have, you can sit down if you want, I've got a couple of questions to ask you. You have an opportunity as well as your 5 minutes to put in 1,500 words in the email to us. That's part of the bylaws. It's not just a matter of 5 minutes, but you at the end can put in 1,500. So that would be appreciated if you put an email in continuing with some of the points that you already raised.
I think these sheets actually need some explanation, right?
Yes, yes. Well,
if that passes this across to somebody else, then there should be notation along with it.
The staff are professional staff well able to deal with that. I would just ask your own involvement. Are you a West Ender?
I've lived in the West End for 16 years. Currently, I'm living in West Vancouver.
You're not currently, so you're not directly affected by this
as your views are. I offer a number of good friends and neighbors.
Whose views are blocked and so on?
Exactly.
You're not a West Ender yourself. Okay.
I owned a co-share in the building on the corner of Cordero and Harwood for 5 years.
Oh,
it's
so
right across from this proposed development.
Okay.
So I'm fully familiar with the site.
Okay. Sorry, when you say you're a corner of the whole building, not just a condo.
I was a co-owner of the condo.
Was.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Councillor Reimer, questions?
Sorry, thanks for coming. Small question for you. Did you provide this information to staff and applicant beforehand? Before this evening? Is this the first time?
This information?
Yeah.
No. I've been working on this for the last 4 or 5 days.
Okay. So they wouldn't have had a chance to review it in any fashion?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
You're asking me, did I have this information and knowledge of these inaccuracies before this? Only up to a couple of days ago.
Okay. It was a bit too, you made a number of statements that would imply it was an intentional misrepresentation, and I just was trying to ascertain why you would think that, but
I'm not suggesting it's intentional, but the discrepancies are so great and so glaring that I don't know what other explanation there can be. If you look at that cross-section again that I was talking about previously, the one on the quadrille paper, I believe that this 45-degree angle is necessary to cast the shadow on the threshold of the building, the smaller building across the street, is intentionally derived to reset all the other angles on the first set of diagrams.
No, it's helpful. I just was trying to understand. I got the impression from the way that you were talking that you had provided this information and that it had been repeated, but that isn't the case. This would be the first time our staff and the applicant would be seeing it.
Right.
Okay.
I think it's extremely important that the council understands the extent to which it's possible that the applicant is misleading the planning department, because the planning department is using this information to come to their conclusions and make recommendations to council. And I'm saying that it's based on bogus information and data.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Woolner. Thanks for coming before council. And our next speaker, number 18, Donald Archibald, is here, followed by 19, David Simsizen, and then Heidi McDonald. Mr. Archibald, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. It's a privilege to be here. I'm here to ask you to reconsider this proposal in its present form, because I'm particularly upset about the block B that is on the corner of Harvard and Cordero. I am a resident of Harwood Street. I live a little further towards Nicola, and I'm a 99-year leaseholder, so I guess you call me a very long-term renter. And I've been there for about 10 years, and I enjoy the environment of Harwood Street and the whole neighborhood. It's an amazing neighborhood. And one of the things that makes it amazing, of course, is this food. The previous speaker actually took all my thunder, because I was going to speak on the fact that the light and shadow study didn't even come close to explaining what I experienced as a resident. The fact is that it is only after the equinox, when the sun moves into the northern hemisphere and back towards the equinox, that the entire the sun comes through those corridors onto Harwood Street. And particularly late in the day when the sun is low in the sky. And that is the evening sun that I have experienced and enjoy, that I sit all winter wishing I could have again. And I would ask you to be very careful and not to deny that. Also, the model isn't here now, but if you look at that model, and you'll see that all the buildings behind this nine-block building are lower than that nine-block building. And most of those people are renters. They live in the Kathleen Court across from me, and in the small buildings along Harwood Street, and the houses, the residential houses that are on the corner of Nicola and Harwood. And they will all be denied that evening light. Because it is only when the sun is really low in the sky and to the northwest that light really pours through. And that's virtually the only light we get, because there are some other tall towers that block it during the day. We get a very early morning sun that comes up in the northeast, and we get the evening light that comes through the corridors in the northwest. So I won't dwell on that. You have an extremely detailed study, but that's from a personal experience of living there and knowing that. And I wanted to point that out because people haven't represented it. The second point is, I guess people have made, but I guess again from the viewpoint of somebody living in the neighborhood and the character of the neighborhood, is please remember that this is not some quiet corner in Marpole or East Vancouver. This is Second Beach. This is English Bay Beach and Third Beach and Beach Avenue. You know, we get a quarter of a million people down there at any particular day, several days a year, and on any sunny day, we get tens of thousands of people down there. So it's not just for us that we need this light and space. Think of the thousands of people that come into that area, and I, believe me, I see them going down Harwood Street talking on their cell phones and whatever, and like, believe me, that's an important concept of having that open space in that extremely congested area. We don't even talk about parking. If somebody visits me, I just say, just take the transit, please. Parking isn't an issue with me. There isn't any. So I would say that my third point, and hopefully the last, and trying not to ramble, but again, you started a process of consultation. I've been involved to some small extent in the walkabout with people around the neighborhood and your planners and stuff, and I understood that that consultation process was fairly valid. But if you go ahead and do this at this time, you're undermining your own process. It loses credibility. So please, don't do it. So all I would say is, please, this is not the place for this kind of infill. This is not the time to do it. I would just ask you, don't approve this in its present form, at least until the plan is complete, and hopefully never. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Archibald. Do you have a question? From Councillor Meigs. Mr. Archibald, you have a question from Councillor Meigs.
Thanks, Mr. Archibald. My question is more speculative, but you're a veteran of the neighborhood. And Beach Towers, as it exists, is a non-conforming project covering an entire city block, very significant. It's above the density that's permitted by the existing rules. If it was a question of approving Beach Towers as they now exist today, do you think there would be community support? If it was simply if they were replacing older buildings there?
I don't totally understand the point of view, but what I can say is that the towers are an icon, the towers are a part of the neighborhood, as it exists. They were built purposely to create that environment. We who live there, including all the renters that live, if you look at that model, you'll see all those low-rise buildings behind the beach tower. They depend on all those views, walking down the street, going to the Safeway, or posting a letter on the corner. That's part of the character of the neighborhood. And that'll be lost. Does that answer your question? I'm not sure.
Well, I think so. It's just in my experience since I've been elected to council that there's a lot of anxiety in the West End about towers.
This isn't a tower.
Well, Beach Towers is a tower, and I just wonder if Beach Towers is being built today, and it's not, we've seen in the report, it's quite...
I can't answer that question. I bought into it knowing it was there, so I accepted it. But the reason that we accepted it is because it has that openness, and the air comes through, and I always call it, well, that wind, but, some people call it the breeze. But, you get the air, the light, the sunsets, the whole... character of the neighborhood. That's that warm orange glow in the summer that I die for. Gone.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Mr. Archibald. Thanks for coming to speak. Next up. Next speaker, number 19. I hope I'm pronouncing this close. David Simcison. Forgive me if not.
It's Simcison.
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 My apologies.
That's fine. It's a difficult name.
It's a mouthful. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor and Council.
If you could just shift that in front of you a little more, people might be able to hear you a little better.
I own and live at apartment 304, 1558 Harwood, and I'm referred to in the policy report as one of the inland neighbors. And I oppose this rezoning application. Similar to the last speaker and several other speakers, my objections stem mostly on the spirit of the neighborhood, the openness, the iconic towers, and the negative impact on the street level views this new development will create based from sight lines disturbs me significantly. Meddling with this prominent Category A potential heritage site, of course, also bothers me. It's not my fault, sorry. Let me explain my specific concerns about the design in the area. I think the form is still far too dense at the low level, at the street level, and it seriously damages the spirit of the street level views of the bay for everyone walking along Harwood and Cardero, as we've heard. At least the original designers of the towers had skill and creativity to incorporate, as everybody's agreed, the wonderful high open atria, entrance courtyard, unobstructed views of the bay, and the horizon from eye level. And I, like others, enjoy that and find it hard to describe the feeling that provides. Expansiveness. And then there's the public art, of course, which was very innovative at the time. And I'm a bit concerned that its new location might be a little bit not as artistically placed as it was originally designed for. The proposed development, bringing the nine-story building even closer to the street, kind of accentuates the tunnel effect when you're walking down Cardero. The architectural style and the proposed building distribution around the site, I think, is incompatible. It disrespects the nice open rhythm that the current towers have, they created. And I've always loved that modernist exposed concrete. And I'd like to see them remain as modernist exposed concrete, Corbusier style heritage buildings, unmodified, contributing to the spirit of the area well into the future. The proposed development, in my opinion, is deleterious to those existing forms, and as well it destroys that open rhythm they create. It doesn't enhance the streetscape for the community at all. I'd like to turn to the statements in the staff report, the policy report, mostly on page 6 of the appendix. Their comment was, with respect to neighborliness, the insertion of new building forms within the site will modify the cultural landscape values associated with the towers sited within an open space. To me, this indicates an acknowledgement of the cultural landscape there, but it understates grossly the impact the encumbrance of the new buildings will have on the spirit of the neighborhood, particularly its connectedness with the horizon and the ocean. It's not an interior neighborhood, it's an ocean-related neighborhood. The architecture, the design development should be done so that it respects the historic fabric but doesn't mimic it. Do we really want a contemporary approach, again, to meddle with that the historical fabric? I can't imagine the existing Corbusier style towers remaining. If we're tampering with their bases, putting glazing, and it would be similar to taking that Lionel Thomas sculpture and putting a plinth halfway up the sculpture and expecting to appreciate it. Do we think this development respects the historic fabric of an A-category towers that draw their meaning from the open space context which they were designed for and within? Infilling and overmassing around them with bulkiness destroys that. It essentially raises the podium up 9 stories. And then a suggestion that the view will be narrowed into view slots compensating for this doesn't respect it, the historical cultural landscape that I enjoy there. They mentioned these Chicago Marina City towers in the report. Can you visualize the base of those towers encumbered by 9-story buildings scattered around them? I don't think so. Anyway, the conclusion in the report, the resulting additional modest impact on views and shadowing are within acceptable limits. I'm not sure acceptable to whom, but, and the staff conclude that the new buildings will not unduly harm the livability of the neighborhood. And furthermore, the provision of the proposed built form will improve streetscape character along the site's frontage. Is it really possible not to significantly disturb the western views of the wonderful sunsets over the ocean? The streetscape character that this development will create is a urban streetscape with no context of its place connected to the ocean. It's not a refinement, and I can't see how someone can make such a statement. It doesn't respect the visual amenity of the open space.
Mr. Sanchizan, and you're over your 5 minutes. If you could just wrap up in a sentence, please.
Thank you. Do we want more density so badly that we're willing to allow this development to scar one of our heritage sites? I respectfully request that Council preserve our unique ocean-connected neighborhood from this bulky development and reject this application. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming to speak here. And our next speaker is Heidi McDonald. Just a quick check-in. Ms. McDonald is speaker number 20. We have just under an hour left till the 10 o'clock end time for this meeting. And we will undoubtedly will be reconvening tomorrow night again at 6:30. We'll be picking up where we finish on the speakers list tonight. I would guess we're somewhere between 5 and 10 speakers, more speakers that we would hear before 10 o'clock. So somewhere in the 25 to 30 range in terms of the speakers, depending on how many questions there are from council, and depending on whether speakers use up all of their 5 minutes. So we'll carry on. Heidi McDonald is our next speaker. Is she here? Ms. McDonald's not here? Okay. Speaker number 21 is Christine Ackerman. And she's followed by number 22, Colin McTavish. Number 23, Zoe Napier-Hemme. And number 24, Diane Cote.
Well, it's such a luxury.
Welcome.
Hello, Mayor and Council. My name is Christine Ackerman, and I'm here today as the president of the West End Residents Association. WERA supports the development of rentals over the development of condos. We like the diversity of the rental units that are being offered here. We have units that are for families, three-bedroom townhouses. We have two-bedroom suites, one-bedroom bachelors. We think that's great. One concern is about approving large developments before the community plan is complete. It doesn't allow us for the future vision of each avenue. Perhaps we want to have a traffic calm area there. So putting in a big
development like this, approving it before the community plan is complete, does cause some concern over that. But primarily, our concern is affordability. And we know, WERA knows, that this is a huge concern for City Hall as well, and for councillors here. So we think that in this development, which CBC reports is saying contains 15% of all the rental units in the West End, we believe you have a huge opportunity here to put a dent in affordability for West Enders. Clearly, this performa works for this developer. They're not paying the DCLs, they're not paying the CACs, they're even giving a public arts amenity. What they're getting is the density, and that's why this works for them. In such a luxurious location, they can charge these exorbitant rents and make it work for them. So what I'm here to do is to give you a solution, a suggestion for a solution, and push you really hard to get this affordability for West Enders. With this solution, we're not asking the developer to make less money. What we're asking for is him to amortize his capital investment over a longer period of time. So our solution is the formula of a third, a third, and a third. And I believe I've spoken to council about this solution before. So this is when you have a redevelopment, you take one third of the units for affordable housing, targeted to the income of the people who live in that community, you do another third at market rental, and you do a third at luxurious rental prices. WERA's position is charge 15 $1,000 a month for the penthouse, but give us a third of those units at starting rents that we can afford. All we're asking for is starting rents. We're not asking for a long-term subsidy. And I want you to imagine how this could be accomplished if Vancouver had a housing authority in place right now. They could take a capital investment position in this project and give us those $950 a month starting rents. For West Enders, median income, $38,500, translates to 30% affordable rent at $950 a month. We don't think this is too much to ask. The bottom line, and I'm going to keep this pretty short because you've heard a lot today, but the bottom line is we believe that diversity creates safety. There's a reason why we like to live in the West End. And for me and for a lot of us, that's because we like to be in a city. We like to have people around us. We like that activity. So density can create safety. More eyes on the street, more people around you. We also celebrate our space and our community with others often. We have pride, we have fireworks. We're the kind of people that you see on the bus and we talk to our neighbors. So we urge you to think about this push for affordability. Everybody is coming to you saying, we want some affordable rentals. You can make that happen in this particular development. You can ask the developer to start with some rents at $950 a month. We were able to achieve some successful seniors, low-income seniors rentals in the last development that we accepted at 1401 Comox. So why can't you ask for that here? Bottom line, though, is despite all the reservations that we have on affordability, as West Enders, we will welcome the new renters into our community. That's it.
Okay.
Terrible.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to caution people not to be weighing in with the peanut gallery. That's very excuse me, sir. I'm going to ask you to be more respectful of everyone who speaks. We that's the bottom line here. Thank you, Ms. Ackerman. Thank you for coming to speak to council tonight. And next speaker is Colin McTavish. Is Colin McTavish here?
He's not here.
Thank you for the update. And Zoe Napier-Hemme. Is Zoe Napier-Hemme here? She's coming. Okay. Followed by Diane Cote, Jennifer Fox, Victor Jatoba Botello. Welcome.
Dear Mayor, Council, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Zoe. I live adjacent to the beach towers in a three-story building, like most buildings around the towers, with the exception of Diane Court, which is an eight-story mid-rise. I am opposed to the proposed beach towers development. The beach towers is unique to the West End, with the sprawling multi-level plaza overlooking the water. This award-winning Category A heritage site left Vancouverites a legacy that put us on the map, along with Expo, as one of the most desirable cities in the world to live in. A legacy which continues to attract tourists, our number one industry, and in so doing, to create and maintain jobs. With tour buses going along Beach Avenue, the additional development would sorely detract from the exquisite architecture and ambience of the current beach tower site. The West End already has the 19-story Alexander development being built at Bidwell and Davie, along with another high-rise at Broughton and Comox, two buildings that were bitterly opposed by West Enders. We also have the Cactus Club, taking the place of the historical, affordable, and quaint food concession at English Bay. The proposed buildings at Beach Avenue and Harwood would benefit residents of the 133 units, which includes two bedroom ones, which is minuscule in relation to the number of residents who would be adversely affected. It seems ironic that a nine-story building with 133 units would be so much more disruptive than four high-rise towers with 650 dwellings. I'm really worried about how the densification of this community would affect the quality of life for Henry Manor residents. Most of the residents in our building reflect the attitude and opinions of the rest of the West Enders, that the changes would deprive residents of the best reasons to live here. Our neighborhood is so dense, we need and value breathing space. In my opinion, and that of my neighbors, the city should continue to focus on the excellent work it is doing in providing affordable housing for the homeless and low-income people in Vancouver, and not permit further densification in this neighborhood. The existing space between the towers has been an enduring public benefit for the whole area around the beach towers and beyond. Please, Mr. Mayor, councillors, don't allow it to be destroyed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for coming to speak. Our next speaker, Diane Cote. Or maybe it's Diane Cote. Is Diane Cote here? Don't see her. So we'll go on to Jennifer Fox, speaker number 25. Is Jennifer Fox here?
Yeah, but I think you need to load the.
Okay. You have a presentation?
Should I step back and let somebody else go ahead and do that?
Let's see how quickly that.
Yeah. You can actually sit down.
Is it going to be quick or?
It will be quick.
It will be quick. And following Ms. Fox is Victor Jatoba Botello. And speaker number 27 is Karina Pacheco Suarez. And speaker number 28, Duncan Wolarchuk.
I've been to numerous rezoning applications hearings over the last few years, and I've spoken out against all of them for one reason, and that's an extreme lack of consideration for affordable housing. So that's why I chose this quote, and I hope this won't be an exercise of insanity tonight, but my name is Jennifer Fox, and I'm a resident of the West End, and I'm opposed to this rezoning application. So the rezoning application for the Beach Towers site was made possible by the STIR program, which many people are aware of. I got these quotes directly from the City of Vancouver's website, from the FAQ page. And I just wanted to demonstrate that this STIR program does say that the rezoning can happen only because of this affordable housing. So one of the short-term measures by which the city can increase the stock of rental and affordable housing. The objective is to achieve rents that are affordable. STIR is one of the many city programs in place to address the issue of housing affordability. These are all quotes. So affordable housing and social housing, these are not the same. Everybody keeps using these terms, and it's really upsetting to me because affordable housing is not the same as social housing. Social housing, I believe, is under the jurisdiction of the provincial and federal governments. I'm talking about affordable housing. Definition of affordability. Under the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation, the cost of adequate shelter should not exceed 30% of before-tax household income. Costs that are less than this are considered affordable. So who agrees on the CMHC definition of affordability? And I've called several people at the CMHC offices, some of them senior market analysts, and they all agree that governments, the private sector, nonprofit groups, researchers and academics, economists, senior market analysts, community organizations, and post-secondary institutions all agree on this definition of affordability. Who does not agree on this definition? Obviously, the City of Vancouver. And here's my proof, Mr. Mayor. Council passed a bylaw in July of 2009. The bylaw allows the city manager to determine affordability, which STIR defines as market rental housing. This is a direct quote. Problem: STIR's legal framework is flawed. The Vancouver Charter provides for the waiver of DCLs for for-profit affordable rental housing. The Vancouver Charter does not give the City of Vancouver the authority to waive DCLs for market rental housing, and the City of Vancouver has improperly delegated Council's legislative authority by granting the manager discretion to define affordability. The definition of affordable under the bylaw is too vague and uncertain to be enforceable. There's no mechanism for enforceability that I can tell of. These concerns have been brought forward to Council. They were written in a letter by the West End neighbors, so I'm wondering why they have not been addressed so far. What does market rental housing look like? This is CMHC again. Market rental housing for a one-bedroom apartment in the West End is noted as $1,179 per month. What does affordable housing look like? These are, the source here is the CRA. So if you take a person's annual income, $30,000 to $40,000, in order for their housing to be affordable, it would have to be between $750 and $1,000. I chose this category specifically because this is the category that I fall under. And this is not, I cannot make an affordable housing situation happen in the West End for this kind of money. Number of people in Vancouver that this applies to, 49,870. Affordability at beach towers. So in order for this, for these beach tower sites to be affordable, and I took a really low number here for the affordable housing, you would have to make $47,160. So if you take all the statistics, and I've put all the sources here, I don't really have time to explain where I got all these sources, but they're all right there, CRA and BC stats. Can you afford it? 77% of people who live in Vancouver could not possibly afford this. 23% could. And how much of that 23% already own homes? So it's actually, you're targeting less than 20% of all people who live in Vancouver with this housing. So, life according to STIR, affordable housing equals market rental housing. Life according to reality, affordable housing does not equal market housing rental. So, is this affordable housing? Nope. So, is this an exercise in insanity?
I leave this up to you, Mayor and Council, to decide that, and I hope that you will reconsider this rezoning. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Councillor Carr, you have questions?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Mayor. I actually just would like to know if you could forward your presentation to Mayor Council for our deliberations.
Okay, thank you very much for coming and presenting to Council. Our next speaker is Victor Jatoba Botello. Mr. Jacobo Botello here. Here he comes. Okay. Followed by Karina Pacheco Suarez. Welcome.
I'm speaking for myself and on behalf of my wife, Karina, who is the next speaker, please.
Okay.
I would like to say that I oppose to this rezoning application because of everything that has been said so far. In fact, I tried to grant my time to one of our fellow citizens here, but unfortunately, I was denied that. But anyways, so let's see. We are not going to have our beautiful sunshine, right? Our breeze is going to be diminished. More and more people are going to live in that block, which is very populated already, right? So I believe we don't need that. Vancouver is known to be as one of the greenest cities in the world, and I'm sure the mayor wants to keep it like that. Right? We don't want a gray city, we want a green city. And building a gray wall right in front of English Bay is not a good idea at all. So I strongly oppose to the application. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Jatoba Botello and Ms. Pacheco Suarez. Next speaker, number 28, Duncan Walarchuk, followed by 29, Luis Villegas, and 30, Lorne Payne. Welcome.
Thanks.
My name is Doug Lodarczak. I live in the West End. I've lived there for the last few years, and I currently reside at 165 Cordero Street, just under two blocks away from the development. I hold a master's degree in urban studies from Simon Fraser University. I've presented at conferences and published work across North America around sustainable economic development, stable urban development. Currently sit on the Development Board's advisory panel and BC Hydro's Electricity Conservation Advisory Committee. And I also had the pleasure of serving my community on the West End Mayor's Advisory Committee. I helped co-author the reports, I helped develop the survey, and given my research background, I was actually the person who developed the methodology for the scorecard that's in the staff report. So I'd be happy to answer any questions about it, but given that it's pretty simple and basic, I'm really unsure why there's any confusion around it. I'm a renter, and I also hear of one of maybe one or two or three speakers that are under the age of 30 that's also a renter in the West End. I'm here to express my strong support for the proposal of the infill project of Beach Towers. There's a whole bunch of reasons to speak in favor of this. Most of that is actually contained in the WEMAX scorecard, as I fill that out. And as a renter, I just think it's vitally important, especially a young renter, vitally important to not only maintain but to replenish the existing rental stock that's aging in the West End. Most of it was built between 30 and 50 years ago. And the Beach Towers proposal clearly achieves this because it creates 133 new rental units, up-to-date rental units, on an infill project, meaning no existing rental stock is removed. This allows not only people to move into those units, but other people within the West End to move into the units, people who potentially vacate older units. This is a very important part. This is probably why I was able to move from my originally very old unit into a semi-renovated unit. There are a lot of things I could highlight about the project, but I think the biggest thing is around the topic of affordability, since this has consistently come as a reason to not support the project. And I think it's important, at least in my mind, to highlight two examples that I feel are consistently left out within the generic rhetoric that I've heard. First, while it's true that a reasonable calculation, I wouldn't deny this, of affordable rent should consist of roughly 30% of your gross before tax income, there are many other factors that should be considered when calculating affordability. In my opinion, no part of living or affordability should be seen in isolation, just your housing or just your food bill or just your transportation bill. So I'm going to use the example of transportation. So we've seen a lot of CMHC data, but according to the most recent data of the Canadian Auto Association, car ownership costs somewhere between just under $8,000 and just over $10,000 per year, and that's assuming 12,000 kilometers a year driven, which is actually a pretty low number. So if I were to move to someplace that was quote-unquote more affordable and need to own a car, this would translate into roughly somewhere between $650 and just under $900 per month to own a car and live in someplace that was perhaps more affordable. Yep. Using the number everyone else has been using, that's in the median income of the West End, which is just under, just over $38,000, that builds out to between 20 to 27% of your income just to own a car. Thus, you know, in my mind, it's important to remember that if we create opportunities to live in dense, mixed-use communities that are highly livable, accessible to transit and jobs, the West End being a perfect example, accessible to Broadway or downtown or something like that, we create the opportunity to save huge portions of a person's income, if not all of that portion, related to transportation. Myself, I no longer need to own a car because I live in the West End and I spend 3% of my after-tax income on transportation. So in my mind, the cost of living in perhaps a more expensive or less affordable unit is still very portable. Regardless, even if you don't account for this, the units of Beach Towers are not as unreasonably as expensive as stated when considering other factors. For example, in my mind, two-bedroom units are meant for two people, whether it's roommates, a family, a couple, someone with a dog or a cat, it doesn't really matter. And in my mind, that seems perfectly logical, and even if we use the combined average income of $38,500, that translates on the low end to about 30% of a couple or roommate's income. Again, right within that mark of what we were just talking about, what we just heard the last speaker talked about. If I myself rent a unit alone, for example, a one-bedroom, and I am not very well above average, my before-tax income in 2012 was just under $46,000, which I don't think anyone would say is very large, that's still starting bedroom price is about 33% income when you calculate in the transportation savings. In my mind, that's totally reasonable. You know, even if you were to move into, if so, for example, if my girlfriend and I were to move into a unit last year, again, we're both about the same level of income. We're both, again, totally understanding we're reasonably better off than both the average West Ender, and there are some people in our community and in the city that are under that average, and it's important to take care of those, but that's not what this project is about. That's not what STIR was about, and that's not the only people to consider. So if we were to move in together, this and starting out, a two-bedroom unit still represents somewhere between 23 and 33% of even the high end of the rental units, and again, that doesn't account for the transportation savings.
Now, Mr. Wojcik, you're over your five. If you could wrap up with a sentence, and you have a question coming from Councillor Stevenson.
Really, at the end of the day, I think this project is important because it replenishes that stock. I think it is affordable. I'm happy to answer any questions about any of the stuff that was talked about. And I think it's very important for council to stay with this.
Okay. Councillor Stevenson, questions?
Thank you very much. Thank you for coming. As you know, this project has had a great many changes when it first came forward. And I recall that when it came forward, initially, we were looking at another tower. And I can say that I was inundated with calls from people in the West End who were outraged by the fact that there would be another tower. There are three towers, and now you're going to have four towers. And then they went back to the drawing board and came up with this or something similar to this. And people again said they didn't like this. In fact, I had people tell me that they should go back to the tower again because it was better than this. In your opinion, having done the work that you've done on various task force and so on, what do you personally think of this end product that we have today in comparison to a tower or some other form that, I mean, that could have been possible?
Sure. I know for me personally, at the end of the day, the most important thing is an increase and a replenishment of the rental stock. I personally aesthetically like towers. I don't mind seeing them whether redeveloped or built in rental projects in the West End. The existing project I actually quite like as well. I think it's improvement along Beach Avenue. I think it's a very soft form of density within an infill project because it is ultimately not as intrusive as aesthetically, again, as a tower, because that, again, there's different impacts around shadowing and massing. Whether or not it was a tower or this project, I think it achieves the most important thing, and that's to increase and replenish the rental stock in the West End. When we conducted the UMAC survey in a span of just over 2 weeks, we added 700 people. And 90% or 80, just on the high 80s, I can't remember the exact figure, the number one thing that came out was increasing the rental stock. So in my mind, in a span of a few weeks, we had a demand or a want to increase the rental stock, whether that's a tower or a nine-story with a bunch of townhomes. Quite frankly, I don't think that was as important as the rental stock. Now, I think the applicant has done a good job to answer to some of the concerns that were brought up, and I remember the original proposal, which I actually did like. And I also like this one. I think they've done a good job of trying to accommodate as much as they can while still not losing the overall objective, which was, again, the rental rentals.
Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Carr. Questions?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Mayor, and thanks so much for presenting. At the very beginning of your talk, you talked about being able to explain the UMAC, the Urban Mayor's Advisory Committee scorecard, and it is included in this report on this in Appendix G. And I do have a question about the housing scorecard. Priority criteria include housing as one. And I noticed that it doesn't have affordability. It has very tiny print. Increasing the rental stock, increasing subsidized housing, increasing co-op housing, increasing family housing, and workforce space. I'm wondering, was affordability not part of any criteria?
So I don't have it in front of me, so I'd have to see the diagram. It shouldn't really matter. If I don't answer, just let me know. But the reason why, the thing that came out consistently in the results from the survey, which is what the scorecard was based on, was there was a large conversation around social housing. And I think there was a lot of confusion, as actually the last speaker really nicely laid out, is the difference between affordable housing and social housing. And very consistently around the responses, where there needs to be more affordable housing, so low income, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there was a lot of, it was really what they were referring to was social housing. And that was something I pointed out. I came onto the committee a few months after it started. I was appointed, I think, three or four, maybe I can't remember, four months after.
and there was a constant interchange of social housing and affordable housing. And so the response rates that we got back in the initial survey was more about social housing. And the conversation on affordable housing was we needed more rentals, there were more rentals. There was some conversation on income, but there was no consistency on what affordability meant. So in my opinion, if you were to state affordability, that's totally up to interpretation. So for example, CMHC says 30%, totally justifiable. In my opinion, I think maybe it's 40% if you have the transportation costs. So I think what was really important was, given the comment responses, and there were hundreds and hundreds, and I read all of them, was more around affordability related to low income, and what we mean by low income is sort of below that 38,000 mark.
Thanks for clarifying that. I hadn't sure. realized that that it was really WMAP really defined housing issues around social housing around.
We didn't define that. It was based on the response rates from the survey.
Right. Okay.
Right. The scorecard was based on the survey. It wasn't based on personal.
Okay. So the scorecard on this project gives a fairly high score, but and including on housing, and we've had a lot of people talk about concerns around affordability of the units for a person of average income,
sure.
And using the CMHC data. But if that's not part of the criteria, then the house of WMAP and a priority scorecard, then housing, this would come high because this project, that is, because it's rental. It doesn't need to be necessarily affordable in terms of the 30% CMHC range. Is that correct?
One of the key things that came out was an increase in the rental stock.
Right.
There was no specification of what the rental stock should be. Right. And so this unit, if it had been perhaps more affordable, and that was, I remember the conversations, it was with us there, and we had the presentation that everyone had, and we had conversations with private around, well, what are the rents and how does that relate? And that's why it didn't end up scoring higher into the final category, because everyone did acknowledge that the rents were, quote unquote, high related to the existing stock. But they still created an increase in rental units and family rental units at that. So it still weighed into the decision, but it wasn't the overriding factor of the whole scorecard, and that's why it ended up placing in category 3 instead of 4, if I'm remembering it correctly.
And that's your time. Thanks, Councillor Carr. Councillor Jiang, questions? Councillor Carr, if you could hit your button, that'll open it up.
Oops, there we go. Thank you very much for coming. Mr. I can't pronounce that.
It's
okay. A couple things I've heard now, and I think you've sat through a number of the presentations. I'm a little confused as to the actual income of the renters or people living in the West End. I've heard mean and median used interchangeably, so I don't know if you know. You're citing the median, which is the number that is directly in the middle. So you can even have a bimodal distribution, so it doesn't matter, right, highs and whatever. Yeah. Or the mean, which is the average, which takes into account every other one. So even I've heard other counselors use them interchangeably here, and I want to know what you know, what that number is. Is it the mean or the median?
My understanding is what when I went and looked at it originally when we were creating the demographic profile on the committee was what was on Census Canada, through the census tract.
Okay.
Which I believe they use median.
They use median, and so that's going to be lower generally than the mean.
Yes.
Because the mean takes into account every other number in the distribution.
Right.
Right. So actually the numbers for affordability can shift depending on what you're using for your definition. If you're using the low end median, that's going to be different from the high end mean, which we saw just in the presentation previously, at 38,000 versus 47,000. That's quite a difference.
Right.
And that's going to make a difference in the affordability or what you consider using the CMHC definition. So on the CMHC definition, now I understand it's sort of a broad guideline. I don't know what you look at, given your training. It doesn't take into account things like vacancy rates, for example. So does the CMHC definition actually apply to Vancouver, given the vacancy rates? Because they said we should also have a certain vacancy rate too, but we're nowhere near achieving that.
I think somewhere between 3% and 5%.
Pardon me?
I think CMHC says healthy vacancy rate somewhere between 3% and 5%.
And we're not even close.
West End is 1.7.
Right. Okay. So that's going to adjust then what that, whatever that afforded 30%. Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. And then of course it doesn't take into account dual income families, which are the vast majority, as you pointed out, and issues about having a vehicle or not a vehicle.
No. Yeah. And there's other living costs as well that are associated with. At least in my opinion, CMHC is always concerned with housing costs because it's right. A housing authority. my association is concerned with in terms of take our, actually specifically, automobile costs.
So affordability really is in the eye of the beholder, of the individual, and you can't, in your opinion, do you think it could be defined as simply as 30% of your take-home income?
I do not, because I think that's, to be honest with you, I think that's an antiquated way of looking at it. I think that accounts for, that sort of definition. I don't know exactly when it was developed, I'm definitely not an expert on that, but that was developed in a time, many decades ago, especially when the government policy was around suburban growth, providing insurance to mortgages and all sorts of
stuff. Well, I wonder if it wasn't just a created a time when it was when men went to work and women were housewives or something, single income families.
It's right? It's a definition that's been seen. She's been around a really long time, and I don't think it does take into account the changing demographics and changing lifestyles.
Okay, thank you very much. Very helpful.
Okay, that's all your questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Walarczyk. Next speaker, we've still got about 20 minutes, so we're going a little farther than I had anticipated half an hour ago. We're to speaker number 29, Luis Villegas. Not here. Lauren Payne, speaker number 30. Is Lauren Payne here? Okay, and we will likely have time for 31 is Gerard Veneman, 32 is Jody Weber.
Mayor and Council, thank you very much for accommodating us tonight. It's actually worked quite well down here as far as I can see.
Yeah, change of pace.
Change of pace, more informal. Okay, Mr. Mayor and Councilors, my name is Lauren Payne, and I am a retired
high school teacher 20 years ago. I have lived immediately south of Beach Towers at the corner of Harwood and Cardero Streets for the last 20 years. I chose this location because I was impressed by the feeling of openness and space around the Beach Towers, and I think this is unique in the West End. The towers rise unobtrusively, permitting three wide view corridors to mountains and ocean, and this is enhanced by ample green space. This is because the towers are separated, and this information has been said many times tonight, by about 30 meters from each other and set well back from the street. This stresses the vertical rather than the horizontal and draws the eye upwards towards the open sky. See all this from my front window, and it's just a beautiful feeling. I can go up on my deck and I can see this space everywhere. It's a wonderful feeling. The proposed new tower would be like a wall between the two existing towers. Somewhat selfish, but it would be right in front of my window. It would be looking like right into a wall. There would be no more view of the ocean and mountains. Gone will be the cherished views of open ocean and North Shore mountains. The architect who designed the towers was recorded in an interview scene at the last hearing we had upstairs. I was moved when he pensively said that the towers have remained unchanged for 45 years and remain a timeless design. Thus, their ongoing heritage status as an award-winning Towers in the Park design. The towers' pleasing black balance and their changing view perspectives are enjoyed by cyclists on the new Cardero bike path and pedestrians on the sidewalks, which are set well back from the tower walls. They are also landmarks seen from the ocean and from the new pedestrian and cycle paths on the seawall. They stand unobstructed behind the welcoming Inukshuk. Regretfully, this could all change with the building of a 10-story tower close to Cardero Street and townhouses along Beach Avenue. I note a safety concern as well. A new entry-exit driveway from the proposed tower would funnel most of the resident vehicle traffic directly along the Cardero bike path. Many cyclists appear to be tourists and rental riders from the seawall path. These riders have a much steeper path up Cardero Street. They're huffing and puffing, and shaken around, which would be directly in front of the driveway of the proposed new tower. Rollerbladers and skateboarders also go down this sudden grade towards Beach Avenue at high speed. Many are shaky beginners. A recent collision between a biker and recycling truck occurred several weeks ago. I saw the truck sitting as he was turning from Cardero onto Harwood, and the poor lady on the bike, I assume, was sitting on the curb, looking quite dazed. Should this project be approved, there will only be 22% increase over the existing tenant occupancy. And this increase will be for luxury view properties. Obviously, very good news for the anxious developers and their lucky few tenants, but very bad news for the surrounding property owners, pedestrians, and cyclists as they look at an imposing wall blocking views and light. Vancouver and West Enders will lose yet another treasured landmark and the open views the present beach towers provide. I respectfully ask Council to reject this present proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Payne. Thanks, Mr. Payne. Councillor Meigs has questions.
Thanks, Mr. Payne. I couldn't catch your address. You said you were south of the town.
1558 Harwood, right on the corner of Harwood and Cedar.
Oh, so you're north.
Yeah. Well, I'm south of it. I was looking.
Well, there are the towers are to the south of you.
Southeast.
East, whatever.
You're on Harwood. Okay. And your fundamental objection is to the view loss, not to the to the price of the rental units.
That's for sure. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thanks for coming to speak, Mr. Payne.
Okay.
And next up is Gerard Veneman. Sorry about that. Councillor Carr is Mr. Payne. Mr. Payne? Councillor Carr has a question for you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, thanks very much. You also mentioned in your presentation the concern around the changes to traffic circulation and parking and access to a main parking entrance on the. So you're, is that the
hill that's in front of you?
Yes.
All right. And can you describe for us? You described a bit about some circulation and people on bikes, etc. But how busy is that street and that hill going down to Beach Avenue? Summer versus winter, for example. Is there lots of traffic, pedestrians, cyclists? I mean, can you just describe it for us?
Okay, well, since the new bike pathway has been put in and the seawall has been drastically improved for cycling, separating pedestrians and so on, it's been a huge improvement. I can't say there's a huge amount of people doing this, but there are a lot more in the summer than there is in the winter, of course, because the riders just move up there. But I wouldn't say it's a really big number of cyclists that come up.
Okay, but you are concerned. There's been an accident. You are concerned about.
Yeah, especially the placement of that driveway, and the fact that when these people come down Cardero towards Beach Avenue, there's no way they could stop if some car suddenly pulls out in front of them from that driveway.
Okay, we can ask some questions of staff of that. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Payne. That's all your questions. And we have Gerard Veneman next on the speakers list. Speaker number 31. Mr. Veneman here.
Can't people have been trying to watch us from home and don't know what speaker number we're at? I'm getting a number of emails in from people saying they don't know and they're not able to come tonight. So
yeah, we will be reconvening again tomorrow night. So.
Can they speak again if they've spoken, if they weren't able to come tonight?
No, they're not on the speaker.
If they're on the speakers list, yeah. People can come to speak tomorrow night, yep. So Gerard Veneman is not here. We will, how about Jody Weber, speaker number 32? Is Jody Weber here? Not here. Stephen Boas will be our last speaker.
I don't know how we should do this technically, but my
Okay. So if you want to go ahead and the clerk can load your presentation. Mr. Boas will be our last speaker tonight. Then we'll have, if council wants to leave questions with staff, as we've done in previous public hearing evenings, we'll give council an opportunity to ask questions of staff that they can bring back to begin tomorrow night's hearing. And just for everyone's information, we will be reconvening tomorrow night, Wednesday, February the 20th, 6:30 is the time that is we'll be starting out. We expect it will be upstairs in council chamber, and we'll have our technical difficulties resolved by then, hopefully. So that 6:30 tomorrow night, we reconvene. And maybe while that's loading, if councillors want to start in on questions for staff, Councillor Reimer, if you're ready to roll with that.
Okay, questions for staff, and I apologize, I wasn't here at the first site, although I have looked at I've heard the presentation and have watched the video, the report. It would be helpful to have, I know there's a high-level consultation summary in the slides, the PowerPoint presentation, but it would be useful to understand the notification to renters. There was a specific allegation tonight that renters weren't notified, and my understanding is that extraordinary efforts were made to make sure that they were throughout the process, and I just want verification of that. I think it would be helpful for council to have a summary of WEMAC's activities. I heard inaccuracies from both non-WEMAC members and WEMAC members, although I had the benefit of an iPad with a connection, so I just think it would be helpful, especially on the issues of housing and which housing was surveyed and where those came from and who was invited to meetings and who wasn't, all those pieces. CMHC definition, another one where there were many opinions given tonight and none of them are accurate, but again, I had the iPad. So maybe we could just get one definition. I think we all agree it's 30%, but 30% of whose income is really the question. So if you can give us the CMHC definition, that would be helpful. On the shadows, altitude, and azimuth, you've seen the presentation. It'd be helpful to have your comments back on that. I used the website that was referenced and got yet another number then. Different than both the applicant and the report, so that would be helpful. The last one, we heard tonight that there were both 2% of the West End's residents living in this building and 15% of renters in the West End. It is impossible for both numbers to be true, so it would be helpful to get a sense that my calculation is 6,000 people would have to live in this building for 15% of the renters in the West End to live there, so I'm assuming that's the wrong one, but it'd be good to know what, if any, is true.
Thank you, Councillor Reimer. So we're going to go back to the final speaker, Mr. Boas, before we finish off those questions. And your presentation's ready to go.
Yes, thank you, Mayor Robertson. I actually brought my computer model with me here. I've got an animation running, but I'm going to refer to the slides, and I'll be as quick as I can.
What I found very special about the West End is actually its siting, and it's important to get down to street level. I built this computer model actually a couple of years ago, and I've been improving it, and once we get down to eye level, we can see the differences from the rather open area that we have to the infill that's proposed. Now, the helicopter views are sometimes good to show the perspective. However, I think that going down to ground level is very important. But before I go into my analysis, I'm just going to point out a very interesting urban design pattern here in the West End. And going upon English Bay, there are all these little triangular pieces that are left over, and many of them function as actual parks or as quasi-parks, and there are further triangular pieces between the interface of the grid of the West End and the shoreline of English Bay. And a lot of views across these triangular pieces are being afforded because of this park-like nature, or in the case of beach towers, it's a semi-park, semi-private it's a very important design principle. In terms of the computer model, I can go into a lot of detail on how it was done. I use the contour data from the open data site, the city of Vancouver, and did a lot of modeling here. And this is the design that I built as a rough massing model. I did not build the Harwood buildings, because they're not part of my analysis right now. Gone down to Beach Avenue at normal pedestrian height, and that is the proposal taken away. And my concern in terms of an urban design analysis, here we're really looking at four stories along Beach Avenue, and it's a much larger impact. And I've put a couple of people at scale, so you can get the idea of the taller buildings even on the frontage of Beach Avenue. This is a corner of Cordero and Harwood, and you do have these wide open views. There are, of course, streets and other occlusions, but you do get views across to the ocean. The proposed building B would block many of those views. And I'm very concerned about the urban design impacts there and the livability in the West End. Architecture needs definition in terms of the solid and the void. And what we might end up with is just solid everywhere. And the void is what makes this architecture read, these heritage buildings really stand out. And it allows the site to perform admirably, because while you have gone for height here, you have tall, slim towers. And in exchange for these tall, slim towers, the public have been given this great amenity of the views across to the ocean. And I'm afraid that this would be lost, and it would actually diminish the livability of the West End. And this is a special site. This is a special site for not just residents of the West End, for other people who come here, who take in the fireworks, who cycle around. And I believe that approving this project would diminish the livability here. And it is, in my opinion, poor urban design. These were all from street level, showing before and after views.
That's not right.
And I do have the data here. So I think that's almost my time. I've got one more minute left. I'll make two quick points. One is that English Bay originally had cottages fronting all along it. And those cottages, including Joe Fortis's cottage, they were bought up by the city so that a continuous band of park space would be created. And this amenity, the view across the site, is something that was made available then. And I think we could lose it. And I will make one final point here, is that the applicant has said that there may be views across here. And I don't know if staff have actually verified by going into the site and using a survey crew to see if views of English Bay would actually be seen once this lower building is built here. I'm wondering, like, I don't know exactly, but I'm just raising this from my analysis. Once the railing's here, a lot of you might be lost and blocked. And that's my 5 minutes, so thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Boas. We have a question from Councillor Meggs.
Mr. Boas, I don't know if you were here the first night or were able to see the presentations from staff and the proponent, but there were elaborate renderings to test many of the same questions. Did you have a chance to see that material?
I wasn't in the room at that time.
Okay. Just my next question, which you can't answer, obviously, is whether you have any quarrel with the accuracy of the renderings provided by the proponent and passed to us by staff.
Okay. My concern was that just by my own analysis using the contour data from the city and the height from their drawing, that I just raised this as a red flag that maybe it requires more on-site verification. Okay, and I don't know what the staff have done with the proponent to independently verify.
Yes, my recollection was a lot of detailed analysis of precisely the questions you're raising, but since you didn't see it, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Councillor Meggs. Councillor Carr.
I'm sure.
Yes, thanks, Mr. Mayor. It's just a follow-up question to Councilor Meigs. I do have the same question, but I just want to verify, in your analysis that you've done, can you describe what views you think or what view corridors there might be from the street behind, to the bay, to the bay, to the water?
Well, there's this very small view that might appear, and I'm a little bit hesitant to say whether it's actually there because I didn't even model the railings. Further down the street,
down Harwood,
you will lose. You don't get much of the view there. I've been on one of my slides. So these cross views are definitely mostly gone, and there's this very slight, small view. It's tough here. There's this crack of a view. Sorry, this one here. It gets a bit bigger because there's this grade change along Harwood, and this small view might be partially blocked, but some of it is being taken up by the proposed buildings there. How much of it can be blocked? I would have to do further analysis.
And have you supplied your analysis to us?
Not yet, but I'm looking at my...
Yeah, I think it would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Rojas. So we more questions. Councillor Stevenson next.
Councillor Reimer, can you turn off the mic?
Councillor Carr, could you turn that one off?
Okay.
So a little earlier, one of the individuals who came forward did talked about basically that the staff have been hoodwinked by the developer the shadowing was completely wrong, and his expertise was far better than staff. So I would really appreciate, I asked him to send that material to you, so it would be really helpful to analyze what he has to say. He said he did it in 5 or 6 days, which is quite amazing given the amount of preparation that this has taken. So if we could have a look at that. Also, this last presentation, I felt I was looking at a bunker with no windows, and I'm wondering, you know, this 9-story building, does it have windows? Can we, you know, just kind of have a look at that? And when I was in Jerusalem, I saw the wall between Palestine and Israel, and the wall along beach that was presented looks like that wall between Palestine. We have a little more clarity on how that's going to work. And secondly, finally, could we have some discussion about the need for family housing in the West End? It's really a problem. More and more people are moving in with their children. And I know in the apartment building that I am in, we have had a huge increase in children, but they have to move out because the space isn't large enough after they have 1 or 2 children. So where are we with looking after families? How does this fit in?
Okay, thanks, Councillor Stevenson. Councillor Meigs, questions for staff.
Yes, if the staff could ask the proponent for any general information about the rents that are currently prevailing in the existing units, I'd be interested to see what the range was, because typically in a building of this age, there would be long-term tenants whose rents might be considerably lower than what we're talking about today. So an element of affordability in the existing staff
Mr. Mayor. Thanks, Councillor Meigs. Councillor Carr?
Yes, thanks, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Reimer did ask 2 of the questions, but I have several others.
Can you turn your mic on there, please? Thank you.
Yes,
I just have a few other additional questions to the ones that Councillor Reimer has asked, and that's, number one, there seems to be a discrepancy between some people saying the rental units are subsidized versus not subsidized. If you could just clarify that question. Also, one of the speakers said that, emphasized that there was an increase in the number of parking stalls. I thought we had that clarified last time, but maybe we could get re-clarification on that point.
Could we add one to that? Do you mind just that another speaker around parking said they can't find parking, there's no parking yet in the West End. We know that there's an enormous amount of parking underneath.
Yes, I don't mind asking Councillor Stevenson's question. Thanks. Of you. Could you Yes, you could just clarify the amount of parking available in the area. And finally, in terms of access egress to the parkade, I don't seem to understand how that's changing, but it seemed to be an intimation that there was a change to it. If you could go over the changes that might occur under the new plan, and particularly if you've done any analysis on the non-vehicular traffic and the potential for some difficulties around that. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Councillor Carr. Councillor Louis, questions for staff?
Here we go. Just further to Councillor Meigs' question, in terms of affordability, within the construct of this development, there's going to be a range of rents as part of the redevelopment of the site. And so at the lower end and the higher end, I think that because what we're seeing is some averaging that occurs across the site and some of those rents being told to us. So perhaps we can understand more in greater fine-grained detail what those rents might be. Also, some of the speakers spoke about the inclusion of young children that weren't contemplated as part of the original design, and the issue of child safety as a result of the introduction of these family units, and perhaps some comments back from staff in regards to how the developer intends to ensure that the site continues to be safe with the introduction of children into the equation as well. Lastly, the concept of home ownership and rental as a choice and as a necessity, it needs to, I think, I'm not sure how you might answer this, but there are some that potentially want to rent, and as a percentage of the population of the city, and then for the West End, what's the percentage of renters specifically to the area, the renters for the rest of the city, and how they may correlate into choices, because not necessarily does everybody want to own, and at some point in time, I'm not sure whether there's any data to indicate choices on home ownership versus rental through that continuum, whether or not we have any of that data or not.
Okay, Councillor Affleck, questions for staff.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just quick questions. Most of the questions have been asked. One was regarding, we had Jennifer Fox saying the City of Vancouver does not have the authority to waive DCLs. I don't know that this is actually waiving DCLs on this one, but can we have more clarification on that one? And I'm wondering, there's one of the biggest issues is shadow and view, and I was wondering if you could clarify to us tomorrow on the policy on shadows and the policy on views in our city, so there's an understanding of the difference and the meaningfulness of those two rules when it comes to planning. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, so that is all of our questions for staff from council. We will hear responses to those when we reconvene tomorrow night, 6:30, hopefully upstairs in council chambers. I'll just remind council it's very important, as we're in the middle of a public hearing, you do not engage in any discussion or correspondence in regard to this application. And I'll ask for a motion to recess.
Almost.
Councillor Stevenson, all those in favor? Any opposed? And that carries. So this meeting is, public hearing is recessed until 6:30 tomorrow night. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for your patience with the shift downstairs.
Is there a cutting-edge technology?
The Chinese are at fault. They hacked into the system, along with Twitter, Facebook, the City of Vancouver, stealing our data on affordability.
What does that mean? What does that mean, Gary? I don't. Please define that.
That's a big block.
Oh, no, I didn't.